And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. Recently, a horrendously terrible terror plot was foiled in New York City. This fiendish plan to explode JFK Airport was discovered by quick-witted TSA officials at Terminal C. With their keen law enforcement instincts, they knew something was wrong when the suspect was carrying mouthwash that was in a 4-ounce plastic container, significantly higher than the 3 ounces allowed. This sent up a red flag, and the highly trained airport security personnel quickly wrestled the suspect to the ground and detained him. Now, furthermore, TSA officials witnessed a second suspect put his laptop computer through the scanners without removing it from his case and placing it in a separate bin. The suspect was also wrestled to the ground, and all plotters were renditioned to Syria for intense questioning by interrogation professionals. In the terrorists' desperate attempt to end the non-torturous questioning, they revealed the names of several other terrorists who were discovered smuggling dangerous nail clippers and suspicious shoes through the security checkpoint. The system works. I'd like to thank all the brave TSA officials, bag handlers, and airport coffee and donut dealers who fight the terror war here at home every day and will bring us victory. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
The sheets are red and moist where I'm lying. God in heaven, teach me how to die. I remember we were flying alone, and it's something in the
studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Indeed it is. It's almost like it was a very special weekly radio address done just for our own Sarah Dillon. It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this month of June of the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the lushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of AM 970, Southern State Radio. Thank you for coming along. It is Wednesday, and welcome to Day 12. It is 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to join us today with your comments, your clarifications, maybe you'd like to share a story of how you almost died on an airplane once.
Stop it.
Maybe.
That is not nice. You know that I'm afraid of flying.
I'm trying to knock it out of you, though. You know what it is? It's like when your kid smokes and then you lock him in a closet with a curtain and you make him smoke the whole thing. He doesn't think about smoking ever again. If you'd like to share a story, maybe wind shear, or perhaps some sort of violent illness that you suffered while on a plane. Maybe you were like Tim.
Medical emergency.
I was going to say, maybe you were like Tim Riley and the person across the aisle just had a heart failure. That's got to be fun. Especially when they come into your, you're listening to your iPod and little thing comes up.
Prepare for medical emergency.
This is the pilot. We've got a medical emergency, so we're going to ask everybody to just go ahead and
panic
now and empty your bowels. If you feel like screaming or flailing about, Janice and Cindy will be able to help you with that. Also, passengers on the left side will be able to see the Grand Coulee Dam. Thanks so much, and thank you for flying.
There you go. It's 503-733-2970.
Thank you.
That's what I do. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. With your comments, your questions, your clarifications, your conventions, your two cents, your what have you. 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. It is Wednesday. It's a glorious day. Was it Cleavon Little says in Blazing Saddles? Good morning, ma'am. And ain't it a glorious morning? All right, here's what's coming up later on today. CNN radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum is going to join us to talk about CBS, Katie Couric, Dan Rather, Les Moonves, and a whole ball of fun. It is a $14 mistake. I completely mangled that, but that's funnier anyway. God, if only it were a $14 unfixable mistake. It's not my word, by the way. Those are the words of sources inside CBS who call Katie Couric an expensive, unfixable mistake. That's what you want on your resume, by the way. You know, I may be a poor man's John Stewart, but at least my resume doesn't say Rick Emerson, expensive, unfixable mistake. Not yet. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard is going to join us today. We'll talk about everybody's favorite thing, the immigration bill. And apparently there's some sort of... I swear to God, when you were on the phone with Laura Caviezel or whoever it was today, or Tyler... It was Laura. When you were talking, I swear to God, I heard you say, the penis. But I guess what you were really saying was subpoenas, which I didn't realize, because I only heard your half of the conversation. You said, yeah, we'd like to talk to Lisa about immigration. What's that? The penis? Okay. And that's what it sounded like to me, as though Laura was sharing as a newly married woman.
I don't want to hear Laura talking about penises.
Well, she is now betrothed.
She is now married.
Somebody sounds drunk.
I am drunk.
Are you drunk?
No, I'm not drunk. I was drunk.
You just said you were drunk.
At one point, I was drunk.
Someone is channeling our boy president this morning. This is like that speech Bush gave where he said...
I feel crazy. I could not sleep last night.
Please don't take this the wrong way, but you look really drunk. I know that that's not the case because it would be illegal for you to be signed on as the operator.
Okay, I am not drunk.
Well, as far as the FCC knows, you're not. I understand, Sarah. I don't think any further explanation is required. I think we all know.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me I look drunk. Okay. I appreciate it.
No. I understand.
Oh, no. Thank you.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm sure you're completely sober, Federal Communications Commission. Are you spitting out your coffee?
No.
Uh-huh. How you doing?
I've been better.
Yeah, as have we all, Sarah. Okay, what else? Jim Roop is going to join us today. He'll talk about Paris Hilton. I guess that Lee Baca guy is going to get dragged before some sort of hearing today. They're going to fix his little red wagon. Also, Paris's parents apparently don't have to wait 4 hours in line to see their daughter. Apparently, they get ushered right in. Apparently, they get to skip the line because they are white, after all. What else? And Ed McCarthy is going to join us today. They're going to try to tar and feather that Nifong guy who mangled that Duke lacrosse case so spectacularly. We'll see if he gets his. You talk about a guy that's going to go in the book. He'll go in the book later on today. That's a guy that really ought to be tarred and feathered and just kicked off a hill somewhere. What else? I have this top five. It's kind of a strange day. I have this top five that I assembled in my head today on the way to work as I was bicycling in. On my bike. Further retarded.
Did you really ride your bike?
No. No, I didn't.
2 days in a row?
I know. I wanted to get it out of the way now. Ripping off the bandage right at the beginning of today's program. I did not. I drove in today. Because I'm a lazy son of a bitch. I'm just a lazy git is what I am. There's no getting around it. I'm not going to make excuses. No rationale, no justification. There's no moral underpinning to it, Sarah. I'm just slothful. That's what I am. So, anyway, so as I was driving in today, spewing carbon monoxide into the air, using up valuable fossil fuels and sending money to terrorists, I was pondering today's top five, and I've created the top five in my head. I just didn't bother to assemble it. But I'm banking on the fact that Scotty J has all of these songs. Today's top five, the top five rock songs it is impossible to listen to seriously ever again. These are the top five rock songs. These are admittedly great rock songs that one can no longer take seriously. Top five rock songs one can no longer take seriously. Now, you may have your own thoughts on that, but I got it all put together in my head. So I'm going to give the top five to Scotty later on in the day. We'll see if he can assemble it. We'll see if he can make it so, as they say. Let's see. What else do I have written down here? What the hell is up with that Mr. Brooks movie? Now, I know that no one cares about it because it stars Kevin Costner and Dana
Brooke. But it was filmed in Portland, wasn't it?
See? That's the thing. No one knows. There's a whole bunch of people claiming that it was filmed in Portland, but I got people from the Portland Film Commission who say that it absolutely was not. I got some people who are from the Portland Film Commission who say that in no way, let me see if I can find one of them right here, who say that absolutely in no way was that movie. And I guess by bringing it up now, people are going to call about it now, and then we're going to get it resolved now. So it's not really a thing we're going to be doing later. It's a thing that I'm intending to do later, but it's going to come up, it's going to come up right now because here I am talking about it. But I got all these people who swear to God that that movie was not filmed here because they would know about it because it would have been run through the proper channels. Blah, da, da, blah, da, da, blah, da, da, freaking blah. So we'll talk about that. What else? Well, that's some other things. Oh, well, we did a snuff watch at the end of yesterday's program. We will do it again today, in case you were not appraised of it, in case you did not hear yesterday's snuff watch. We'll do it again today, because it is worth noting. And don't forget, coming up Saturday, Scotty J and I get to, I don't know why we agreed to this, we get to judge the Portland Teed Idol contest. That'll be exciting. At Reed College. It's all my favorite
you
things.
You and Scotty?
Yeah.
That's just creepy.
It's not creepy.
It is creepy.
It's not creepy because I agreed to it thinking it was going to be you and me. It's only creepy because of the Scotty factor. Let's be honest.
No, it's creepy because you're going to be looking at young girls and judging them. That's creepy.
It's not young girls.
Are they not young girls?
Teens of all varieties and genders, Sarah. Could be hermaphrodites for all I know.
So you're saying there will be females and males?
Yes, I'll be leering at young boys. That's what I'll be doing on Saturday. That's not creepy. That's just wonderful, Sarah. I'll be at the Portland Teen Idol Contest, which is happening this Saturday at Reed College. Because, you know, I look for any excuse to go to Reed. I love hanging out at Reed College. Like hanging out at the goddamn Apple store doesn't make me feel poor or unfashionable enough. I get to go to Reed, where Steve Jobs comes from. So that'll be fun. So I was hoping you were going to be there, and then after I agreed to it, I realized you were going to be gone. So I think if I was there, I would just be sitting around blinking and looking inept. If you were there, I would look inept and unfashionable.
What are you and Scotty going to even do there? That's just creepy.
With Scotty, it's just going to be me sitting next to Scotty, who's going to be increasingly drunk and making comments about nubile young girls. So it's all very awkward.
Are you going to take Scotty out drinking before?
No, I'm not. I'm just going to meet him there, and I'm going to try to leave early. So, all right. Remember when we took Kyle? You weren't there. We took Kyle to that Miss Hawaiian Tropic judging contest. I don't think you were actually part of that.
I wasn't.
Our old intern, Kyle, who made some of the greatest statements. Like when these girls would come out for the Miss Hawaiian Tropic beauty pageant, and Kyle would say things like, "That girl's got too much self-esteem for my taste." And then he'd give her like a 2. On a scale of 1 to 10. I don't like the way she looks me in the eye. 1. It's fantastic. All right. And I know you keep labeling it as creepy, but really, it's not so much creepy as far as, I mean, because I'm...
Wait, what kind of contest is it?
It's like a singing contest, you know. So there's nothing really creepy about it, I guess. I mean, it's just retarded. It's just, it's only creepy in the sense, because I don't have kids, so it doesn't really matter to me. It's only creepy in the sense that Scotty's suburban dad of at least one young girl, I think, is going to be there. For me, it's just ridiculous, because who am I to sit there and judge somebody on their singing ability? I mean, what place do I have? No, you're terrible. Although, let me just say this, though. And we'll talk more about this later, because it's coming up Saturday when Scotty and I will be judging the Portland Teen Idol competition. One of the girls who is competing, I snuck a peek at the list of what they're going to be doing. One of the girls is going to be singing a Storm Large song.
So really?
So that'll be interesting and or awful.
Is she singing Ladylike?
Yeah. Yes, she is. I'm sure that'll be wonderful. I'm sure it'll be flawlessly executed. Because, you know, Portland's got talent and so forth. What else? Well, that's it. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Oh, wait, hold on. Before we do anything else, hi, Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up? Why, hello.
Why, hello to you.
How can I help you, sir?
Well, my stepfather used to be a pilot for a major airline. And one day, our entire family was coming home from vacation, and he actually was flying the plane. And right before we were getting ready to land, huge wind shear. Plane literally went at a 45-degree angle.
Excellent.
To its axis. And he managed to correct it, landed, a couple screaming people and the whole thing, because, I mean, it was kind of like going on the old Whippet ride. We landed, got off the tarmac and everything. talk to him about it. You know, we are just kind of, you know, I've flown so much because of having a stepfather as a pilot. No big deal. He literally, when he got off the plane and we discussed about it, he said, "You guys don't realize just how close y'all were to being dead."
That's something you like to hear.
On one hand, it made me, you know, kind of scared the crap. And the other hand, it goes, "Well, glad you were a really good pilot and had 35 years of experience of it." He said, "Yeah." He goes, "Wasn't it for the fact that this plane is made for that kind of thing on some of the newer planes that everything is computer run, we'd be a big ball of fire."
Well,
right,
that's
now
the sort of thing you don't want to—a big ball of fire. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, don't forget Sarah Dillon is flying out of town tonight.
Thank you.
The sheets are red and moist. Where are
keep playing that? That's just me.
I'm trying to make you feel better.
You know that I have a real fear of flying, and that's just not nice.
Is your voice getting scrapey?
I don't know. I feel like I'm falling apart.
Well, why should I be the only one? All right. Tim Riley's working. Tim Riley's busy clipping coupons.
No, I'm not. I'm reading the London Sun, courtesy of our friend Mark the Brit.
Oh, yeah. Mark the Brit dropped off the London Sun, and then the, what is it just called, the Sport or Sports?
Scotty has that.
It's because it's got a buxom, a nearly nude woman. You're talking about creepy.
Well, he's trying to do some comparisons and getting ready for Saturday.
I thought you meant because of his fight with Mrs. J.
Oh, no.
Shopping for the next model. I said that. That wasn't Scotty. That was me who said that.
Right.
Scotty, because it's not enough that he's got a picture of that barmaid's huge cans and it's in the room with him. Now he's got a huge picture of whoever the page one. It's not even a page six girl. She's right in the front. Mark the Brit dropped off a couple of the British newspapers where they never found anything they couldn't sell by putting boobs on the front of it. What's this? Well, it's, you know, it's a can of yams. Well, let's put some big breasts on the front of it. I mean, they really shame America when it comes to the breastification of any and all products at the supermarket. So he dropped off the Sun, which is sort of their version of the New York Post. He also dropped off a copy of the Sport, which is like a sporting newspaper over there. But on the front, you know, it's like cricket scores and Manchester United and, you know, whatever. Just, you know, whatever it is that, the, you know, the Beckham news, whatever it is that they talk about over there. But then on the front, for no real apparent reason, a woman with huge cans falling out of her swimsuit. Because that's how they sell everything in Britain. So Scotty's there, got that, of course. Maybe he can read that during slack moments at the Portland Teen Idol competition this Saturday. It's 503-733-2970. Tim Riley is working on the following stories for your edification.
Well, it's left wingers gone wild. Portland's insane mayor has made us the laughing stock of the nation.
Next.
By declaring he is livid that illegals were busted at the Del Monte plant.
How dare you?
We'll have full coverage of his lunacy. Joe Lieberman continues to demand we attack Iran and will not take no for an answer. Michael Moore's sicko premieres in Sacramento. Mr. Wizard is dead. Kevin Federline's ex-wife is pregnant with his fifth child.
Don't you mean Sacramento, Tim?
Yes, I have. That is correct. And we'll also have some bites today from Larry Burkhead, Dan Rather, and Paris Hilton's aunt. What more could you ask for, really?
I don't know.
Nothing.
All right. Nothing. All right. And I have nothing. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Listen to this. See, here's what I'm talking about with this business of Mr. Brooks. A movie that's already come and gone, I think. Not everything's still around. It's gone. It's terrible. You know why? Dane Cook's in it. So's Kevin Costner. What else do you need to know? Rick. I'm not here to diss any of your radio family, especially one who's a film nut like Scott Daly. However, Scott's claim that Mr. Brooks was filmed in Portland is more than way off. Try Shreveport, and many parts of Louisiana, not Portland. When a film comes into Oregon, any film, it runs through the Oregon Film Office before filming, sometimes as much as a year in advance. Once it's listed, union and non-union companies alike are called in, such as mine. We have the option to either work on the film or not. This film never came to Portland, nor would it.
How big is the Oregon Film Board, and what does it do every day?
I have no idea.
Who works there?
They sit there and they remind people the body of evidence was filmed here. That's the thing. They just send out press reports. Do you realize that Madonna's body of evidence was filmed here? Do you, sir? Do you, sir? He says, this film never came to Portland. What film that did come here was the last year's film that Kevin Costner was working on. The Guardian. They filmed that in Astoria.
Other than that, his 1997 film, The Postman, was also filmed here. Many, listen to this now. This is where he sticks the knife in. Many film industry people in Oregon heard Scott's F-up and wigged out that he would make such an idiotic error. If you don't believe us, check the goddamned film office. What a disproportionate anger. That's what I like to see. That's what we like to hear on this program. People getting angry about things that really in no conceivable realm of existence justify that kind of anger.
What was the name of that movie again?
God bless you, sir. Mr. Brooks, featuring the box office sensations Kevin Costner and Dane Cook. Dane Cook, God, 1457 and ticking. God, thank God almighty. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
What's going on? Hey, Sarah, don't worry. Dying on an airplane isn't the worst thing that could possibly happen.
What's the worst thing that could possibly happen?
Well, my last flight, I flew over to Idaho, Boise, with my wife and young child. And on the way home, I decided to polish off a half gallon of vodka with the family over there, but right before we got
with
on the
airplane. Family. How much did the kid drink his share? Did you have to drink more?
Oh, no. This is with the adult family.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, all the way from the house to the airport, all the way through the airport, I was throwing up in every available garbage can and car that I was in. And then once I got on the airplane, stumbling my way through, the fellow right in front of me had to listen to me puke all the way from Idaho to Portland.
That's got to be a
basically,
lot of fun.
Basically filling up an entire... plastic garbage bag, not one of those airline puke bags. I filled one of those and
like
they got
like a kitchen Glad bag.
Yeah, it's like a giant garbage bag.
Excellent.
And that was pretty bad.
Well done, sir. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. All right, excellent.
Filming locations for Mr. Brooks, Shreveport, Louisiana, and Portland, Oregon, USA.
Now, see, is that in the Internet Movie Database?
Yes.
But, you know, anybody can make crap.
I know extras were putting their roles in for that.
I have an entry in the Internet Movie Database.
So do I.
That's
me. I'm Bradley 6.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like the assistant AD for one of your videos.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you know where that information
Everybody
came from?
Joni.
Yeah. Joni and I put all that stuff in.
Did she put some more stuff in for me?
Probably.
Does she have dead bodies and things like that?
Yeah. I think the only reason that I'm on the Internet Movie Database is I think Joni and I put our own film on there. Which is fine. You can do that. It's not like Wikipedia. On Wikipedia, you're not supposed to put your own entry, nor have I ever. I've never put an entry for myself. I think I corrected something on my Wikipedia entry once. I think they misidentified somebody that I'd worked with or some station I'd been to. Anyway, I changed that. I've never put an entry for myself on Wikipedia because that's considered gauche. I did put an entry on Internet Movie Database, but it really wasn't for me. It's because I wanted everybody, because that's everybody gets a credit. It's you, it's Aaron, it's Clyde, it's everybody who is in remote control. I don't think Bigger Than Jesus has one. Just because, man, here's the thing. The Internet Movie Database, that takes like a good two and a half hours of your time to put an entry in. I mean, it takes forever. It takes freaking forever to put an entry in there. So
they do have Bigger Than James Dean.
That's my next film.
The Bigger Fish? Bigger Than the Basket.
I wanted, Bigger Than Jesus. After we did Bigger Than Jesus, I really wanted Joni. I was trying to push her to do a whole series of blatant exploitation cash-ins for different genres.
Bigger Than Tina.
No, like after Bigger Than Jesus, I wanted to do like a hip-hop version. I really wanted to do, just called Back in the Day, a hip-hop fan's journey. And just shamelessly cash in one forever. Do a country one. Do a jazz one. Do one for, do one for zither music. All right.
There's no Bigger Than Jesus.
Right. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. No, as I said, it takes 3 hours to enter your movie in there. Screw that. I don't care that much. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I'm looking at a couple of different movie sites, including Movie Jungle and China. And anyhow, they both indicate that the movie was also filmed here in Portland.
Well, so it's going to have some...
Louisiana,
realize so. I have no dog in this race. I don't give a rat's ass whether Mr. Brooks was filmed here or not. I've never seen it. No one has seen it. No one's going to see it.
And, Sarah, about a week ago, I was on a flight from Louisiana to here, and we almost got hit by lightning. Came really close. I've never seen a stewardess or whatever they're called nowadays actually jump into a seat and strap down and say, "Oh, S."
Oh, my
Fantastic.
God.
Well done.
Have a wonderful flight.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Hector.
God bless you. How are you feeling over there?
I'm really freaked out.
Did we do our introductions today?
No.
All right, well, I skipped over you and went right to Tim.
Went to Tim. Yeah.
How are you feeling, Sarah?
Oh, no.
I think it all passed.
Oh,
how are
no,
you?
No. I'm golden. Golden. I'm really nervous about tonight. I don't like flying in the middle of the night either, and my flight's at like midnight.
Yeah. It means by the time you land there, it's gonna be like 4 a.m.
Yeah, but I think we land like that time, like 8 or 9 a.m.
Do you?
Where? In New Orleans.
Oh. Is that where... Oh, Miss Brooks was filmed there, wasn't it? Oh, Mr. Brooks?
I don't know. I'm just enjoying Sarah's unique style of enunciation this morning. I'm just enjoying your rather unique and stylistic approach to the English language and the way in which words are formed.
The Paula Abdul way.
It's not quite working.
Seriously. It's like learning. Exactly. I don't have any follow-up joke. I was going to say it's like learning English from it's like a book on tape by blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Paula Abdul really is the most current reference there. There's a few years ago it would have been somebody else, but she really is the most.
You know, I'm trying here.
I understand.
Or the Armenian School of English.
Son of a bitch. Master. All right. Take me to Greenwich Village, you mother effer.
Do you want me to call you from New Orleans?
Do I want you to what?
Call you.
From where?
New Orleans.
Oh. Were you doing an intentional contraction just now when you said New Orleans?
No. New Orleans.
Oh.
I'm not pretending to be hip. I'm not hip.
Okay. We should break now. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Steve Kastenbaum coming up at the bottom of the hour, followed by Lisa Goddard, Tim Riley at noon. More of Sarah Dillon, Scotty J, the Top 5, Jim Roop later on. Don't go anywhere. You stay right there. It's all red and moist. You're a chill. Loud.
I know.
Hi, hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Now, effortlessly, I hit me. Me no talk good. Me talk pretty one day. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970.
Did you like that book?
What?
Me Talk Pretty One Day?
I never read it. I just quote the title to make me sound smart.
Seriously, I got halfway through it. Everyone I know loves it. Got halfway through it. Could not finish it. I was so bored.
Me Sound Smart, quote book title by pretentious author. All right, there you go. That's David Sedaris. The brother, I believe, of the equally pretentious Amy Sedaris, who everybody has to claim they love. 503-733-2970. I know you do.
I really do.
She's got big, funny teeth.
I own season one of Stranger Things.
I know. I tried to like that show. I just couldn't get into it. I understand. I know many people who like that show. I'm just not one of them. It's fine. 503-733-2970. No, you know, who am I thinking of? It's not Amy Sedaris. The who am I confusing? Is Amy Sedaris... Is she the one that did that book of...
She's Jerry Blank.
Yeah, I know on that show, but is she the one that just wrote that book where she traveled across the country visiting places where politicians were killed?
I don't see that happening.
Because she's a contributor to NPR, isn't she? Like when she's not busy starring in kooky ironic sitcoms, isn't she also an NPR contributor? Why do I care about this? You know, I don't care about it, and I'm going to stop caring about it right now. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. And she was the voice of What's Her Guts in The Incredibles, the daughter. I think I'm confusing a whole bunch of...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm confusing a whole bunch of brainy comedians. Well, whatever. 503-733-2970. Steve Kastenbaum joining us now from the city that never sleeps. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Good.
I am dandy, brother man. What's up in your life?
Day. Having a good day.
Where are you at? Your phone is acting. Are you on a regular cell phone or are you in the studio?
I'm in the studio.
Okay, so.
It's better now.
Yeah, if it's fading in and out, if we act like we can't hear you or if it's getting fuzzy or something, that's it. There's some. There has to be some sort of a fly in the ointment. Hey, let's talk about the. And I'm quoting now other sources. This is not my opinion because I'm a team player. Let's talk about the expensive, unfixable mistake that is Katie Couric. Or Katie Couric, as it says here on the CNN prep sheet, where quality is job one. CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather, that's Rather with the less conventional lowercase r spelling, by the way. Mm-hmm. Boy, God, CNN is just, what is this, being written by a team of monkeys? It says that the network is dumbing down and tarting up the evening news.
Yeah.
So, what is the deal? So Dan Rather says... What is he saying? Is Dan Rather saying that no one will watch the news because it's not being done by a white man? Or is Dan Rather not saying that, but is that what CBS is claiming the reason is? It seems like somebody is claiming sexism and somebody's not. I can't figure out who is who, though.
You know, I was reading the transcript of part of the transcript of Dan Rather's phone interview with the Morning Joe program with Joe Scarborough on MSNBC, where he made these comments. And it said that, well, he did use the dumbing down content part, the phrase. He says, you know, that CBS was dumbing down the news.
Right.
And then he said that they were tarting up the evening newscast. But let me find the direct quote, because I don't want to get it wrong.
I just make it up. Nobody will know.
He said the mistake was to try to bring in the Today Show ethos to the evening news and to dumb it down, tart it up, in hopes of attracting a younger audience. So I don't read into that as a slam on Katie Couric because she's a female anchor. To me, I read that as a slam on the story choices and the way they present the story.
Well, the phrase tarting up does seem to have certain deliberately female connotations to it. Let's not delude ourselves about that.
Okay.
I mean, and I'm not saying Katie Couric. I'm not saying Katie Couric a hoe. I'm just saying, look, when you use the phrase tarting up, no one would say that if it was a male anchor. That's very, whether he's doing it intentionally or not, tarting up is a reference to Katie Couric and the perceived sex appeal that she would bring to the program, right? I mean, that's, I'm not trying to pick a fight where there isn't one. I mean, I'm just saying somebody here seems to be saying this is about the fact that she's not a white guy.
Yeah, I definitely see where that comes into this as well. I wish I had heard the interview live so I could see, you know, the entire conversation and find out what the gist of it was, whether he was talking mostly about Katie Couric or if he was talking more about the story choice on CBS and where CBS's news division is these days. So, you know, I can't speak to all of that. I've just seen these excerpts. But then Les Moonves, you know, immediately fired back, calling the remarks sexist. And it was and Les Moonves said that he was surprised at the amount of negative coverage Couric has been receiving, which is really interesting because they broke a record for their all-time lowest or smallest audience.
Yeah, I'm stunned that people are talking about it. I can't believe it.
He's stunned that they're talking negatively about it.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this, and again, I'm not passing judgment on these sorts of things. I'm just saying, speaking empirically now, examining simply the evidence at hand, does it not indicate that the television evening news audience, which is somewhat whiter and somewhat older, if not drastically so on both counts, than the audiences for other programs, does this not indicate on some level that old white people want to watch news delivered by other old white people? I mean, that really is where this. I mean, look, let's talk about my in-laws. My in-laws are old, withered white people who want to watch news delivered by people who look like them. And I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying you can't change Hicks, my friend. And, you know, Hicks have got a viewing preference.
Well, I also think that you know, they're not picking up a younger audience anywhere in network news as their older audience, you know, the reality is, you know, as people get older, they eventually die. And you have to replace that audience every year in order to sustain a network evening newscast. And the fact of the matter is, so many people from my generation, your generation, you know, they get their news now from the internet in addition to watching TV or watching cable news and reading newspapers. But a majority of them now only go online for their news.
I cannot remember the last time I sat down and made a concerted effort to deliberately watch the evening news.
It's been a while for me too, but that's because I sit here and I watch CNN all day.
Well, listen, Sarah Dillon, when is the last time you sat down and said, well, I got to be home to catch that evening news?
I think never.
Sarah's 26. She has never, ever made an appointment to watch the evening news. Ever.
I think that's the case with most people in their 20s. You know, whether they're in their young 20s or their late 20s, I think that's the case. And that's the problem that the network news organizations are facing today. And that's why you see so many of them having this multimedia content on their websites now and how they're urging you to go to their websites to view this stuff. And a lot of stories wind up getting their first exposure on the network's websites, their news websites, before you get to it on TV.
If I may put forward a slice of personal comment here, why is it I will never understand things like this. Why is it that what is so patently, or as the British say, patently obvious to you and I, can't be seen by anybody else? I mean, really, honestly, just cut all the fat away from this conversation. You and I and Sarah, I'm not saying we're dumb, but it's not like we're some brain trust as such. I mean, it's not like we're paid thinkers. We all know that people don't sit around and schedule their lives around the television evening news. We all knew that Katie Couric was going to be a relative disaster for this reason. How is it that the three of us knew all of these things to our bones, and yet these guys were being paid $200 million a year to consult the CBS Evening News couldn't figure it out? I could have sampled just a bunch of idiots walking by in the street and they would have known this. I really honestly wonder how it is that they don't get stuff like this when just your average moron knows all of these things.
Well, you know what it is? The evening newscast, that evening newscast at 6:30 here in New York, I'm not sure what time you get to see it there. There's usually a replay.
I have no idea. None. Yeah. Zero.
It's the flagship of the news operations in these networks, and they'll keep them going for as long as they possibly can, even if it's losing money, because that's the face of the network as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, well, they've chosen the face badly. It's time for a face transplant, my friend.
They got to do something over there at CBS, because they're really hurting numbers-wise with the ratings, and if they don't have the ratings, they don't have the advertising dollars, and then everything falls apart.
Yes, yes, it does. And especially if you work in the CBS radio division, and when you see things like, well, they've just lost $14 million in Katie Couric, they just blew $25 million a year that they were making on the Ima show that they've decided they no longer want.
Right.
So that's $39 million a year that CBS has got to make up from somewhere. I'm sure that it won't come from cutting back smaller stations in the radio division. That would never happen.
Oh, I used to work for a CBS radio station. No, that doesn't happen at all.
We're going to go out on your cynical laugh. God bless you. Thank you, Steve Kastamov. Enjoy your day, sir.
Thank you very much.
There you go. God, yeah, thank you. God bless him. That was the best thing ever. Just that bitter, dry little laugh at the end. So if we're not here next week, you'll understand why, huh? All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Is this Lisa Goddard already? I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, where's the time gone? Where do the days go? All right, I got to take just a second to reset my brain. Hold on. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent to the stars, the one, the only Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there. How are you? For the love of sweet Christ. Hello? Hi.
I heard her.
You were there for a second. Is it dead where you are?
Oh, yep. Now it's faded down, so now I can hear you.
Aye. What was going on there?
I think sometimes the sound channels are switched, and I ended up just hearing whatever is the music that you play instead of your mic.
Ah, I'm sorry. That was our mistake. I'm sorry.
Fascinating.
Let's blame Katie Couric for it. She's going to be the, we're going to blame her for all of our woes today and on alternate Wednesdays from now on, just so you know.
Oh, how'd she get picked?
That really is the magical question, isn't it? How did she get picked? That is...
I'm not shocked.
The person who can answer that question is the person who can pull the sword from the stone, Lisa Goddard. How did Katie Couric get picked? All right, well, let's talk about... Apparently, you're not talking about a penis. Apparently, you're talking about subpoenas. That was a mistake that I heard this morning when Sarah was talking to Laura Caviezel. What is the subpoenas issue? Yes, well, especially in Washington, where both things are waved around with frequency and impunity. Tell me, what is the subpoenas issue?
Yes, all right, we've got subpoenas finally. Well, not that I've been wanting them, but there's been so much talk. Are they going to issue subpoenas? Are they not? Blah, blah, blah. This is in the U.S. attorney scandal with those 7 or 8, depending on how you want to count it, U.S. attorneys who were fired, and all going back to Alberto Gonzalez and the attempts to force him out. Well, the White House has had requests for months from Congress, from 2 different committees, one on the House, one on the Senate, to talk to very specific individuals who may know about why these attorneys were fired, or at least what kind of role politics may have played, what kind of role the White House played in determining who should be fired. So Congress said, hey, we want to talk to these, 5 people, I think it was, probably a little bit more than that, and one of them is Karl Rove, also one of his assistants, and various others. And the White House has basically not responded. They did make an offer, and we talked about this before, to say, well, we'll let people talk, but it must be behind closed doors, and there can't be a transcript, and it's off the record with no oath. And Democrats said, are you kidding?
This, seriously.
There's no record, so forget about it. So this now is the Democrats' response coming weeks and weeks later, saying, all right, if that's the only deal, we're going to pull out the subpoenas. We're going to see if we can get a reality TV show out of this and send some bounty hunters up there, I guess, to get these officials. But they've targeted two people specifically to start with. Both of them have now left the White House. One is political director Sarah Taylor. The other, well-known White House counsel, former counsel Harriet Myers. So far, the White House has not responded, but, you know, we just don't expect that the White House to immediately give in and say that they will allow these officials to speak about personnel matters. So, the bottom line here, either the White House will let these two talk to the committees, or these two will make their own deals, as we saw in the case of Monica Goodlein from the Justice Department, or three, we could have a constitutional showdown.
Oh, see, you know the way to win my heart. That's exactly why I'm using the phrase showdown, constitutional crisis.
I saved it to last.
Constitution hanging by a thread. These are all things that make my heart go pitter-patter. Like,
what I thought.
Yeah.
We're almost there. We are almost there.
That
right?
is so great.
We've seen in there.
That is fantastic. And then, as much as I try to avoid talking about this immigration business all the time, you know, there is some local relevance today, and that is because yesterday we had I don't know if it was a state raid or a federal raid. I'm unclear about it. I have to go back and look at
it. There has been a new round of raids. I think probably a federal raid. I know that they are a new round in the last couple of days.
There was a raid at the Del Monte Fruit Factory here in Portland, Oregon, which is in our little town, which is front page news. Today's Oregonian, and where they went in and they arrested 134 illegals who were working there. And this is not a big surprise because there was the independent paper, the alternative weekly paper here, 2 weeks ago sent one of the reporters in who, you know, came back and said, look, like 9 out of 10 people who work there don't have papers. They have papers. Yeah, 90% of the workforce is illegal. And, you know, at no point, though, in this article do they talk about the government going in and taking an iron boot to these jackhole companies that continue to hire illegal aliens. I understand why people come here looking for a better life and so forth, and I don't think anybody's opposed to that in theory. But it also doesn't seem like anybody is doing anything about these companies that just hire illegal aliens, seemingly with impunity. And so Does the immigration bill, is a dumb question.
Making the most money off of
Yeah,
that.
I should have asked this like a month ago. Does the immigration bill in any way address that? The idea that some, group of fat white guys sits around a table and decides to raise profits by 90% by hiring some guy for 12 cents an hour?
It does. It requires all businesses to get documentation and basically have a verification system that the feds can check that each one of their employees has a Social Security number. But then the question is, and this happened in this raid, I'm now reading the story in Portland, that what if they use fake Social Security numbers? Well, the system is supposed to be that you should be able to find that out. You know, they'll punch in Social Security numbers and figure out if they're fake, or it'll send up red flags in Washington if the same one is coming up or if somebody's dead, those kinds of things. The bill, in theory, does deal with that, and those who support the bill say it deals with it very well. But there are questions as to how that would actually, how long it would take to put that in place, how much it would cost business, how much it would cost the United States, and how long it would take to get that done. They say 18 months, that's the Department of Homeland Security, to get that employee verification system going. But other people think it would be longer than that.
Well, here's what I don't understand. I mean, when I get pulled over by the cops, and the cops say, hey, give me your license and registration. I hand the cop my driver's license and registration. That cop can go back to his car and using SCMODS, the State County Municipal Offender Data System.
Really?
I'm just kind of making that up. I'm stealing that from John Landis. The man goes back to his car and he punches in my information and he knows right away whether I'm real or whether I'm not, right? I mean, that's the deal.
Right.
So I don't understand.
That's DC license. That's a whole other deal.
Unless you're a DC license, in which case you're only two-thirds of a person, apparently. I don't understand why it is that we just don't have some system, like when you got a job and the HR person punches in your number and it goes into some sort of a database. You got to be on file with the government to get a job anyway. So I don't understand if you're supplying fake papers. These companies clearly just don't care, don't want to care, don't want to know, right? I mean, that's the only way around it. It's not like they couldn't know. It's clearly that they just don't wish to know.
I don't know. I think that's possible. I think that in general, our government has not been focused on this problem at all, and I think that this is the upshot from that, we have technology to do this, they haven't put it in place, but for every year that they haven't attacked this issue, there are more and more businesses that it's going to get harder to put new infrastructure in, even if it's just a, you know, computer infrastructure. Hopefully, you know, they say it's not going to be that hard of a transition, but no one really knows. And I think it's just been a real lack of focus, a real lack of willingness to get this done. And it is possible that businesses have been very happy to let this go to this point, and that has helped Republicans who've been in power also ignore it. I don't know that that's the case, but it seems possible.
All right.
I don't know. But, yeah, you know, I'm flipping through my copy of the immigration bill now, and it does go into detail about exactly how it would have employees be verified and employers checked, but it's not clear how often there would be raids to determine is an employer reporting everyone that's really at their plant.
Right.
It would be the employer would be reporting a number of employees, but maybe there'll be other people working there that they aren't reporting. So it does look to me in a quick read that there is one enforcement question there.
Hey, before we wrap things up,
yeah.
Do you have a particularly terrifying or unnerving story of airplane flights? Sarah Dillon's going to be flying out tonight at 11 o'clock, and we're attempting to round up as many off-putting stories of air travel as we possibly can.
Oh, wow. I wish I did, but I don't. I've got nothing on that.
Never, that's okay, Lisa.
Never experienced any bad wind shear, never had a near-death experience.
I did have a very long flight with a drunken Swedish man. It was fun for the first 2 hours, and then it wasn't fun.
Did he have a hat pulled over his eyes, and did he say a lot of things like horgy borgy?
No, but he was having a much better time than I was.
That's
like
always
a big student group. I couldn't drink, and it was just.
That's always the case, isn't it? They're always having a great time in that conversation. Meanwhile, you're wishing the floor would open up and swallow you.
Same conversation for 8 hours. Yeah, it was rough.
Fantastic. All right, Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks,
fantastic.
Rick.
Well, I did my best. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. I was just saying, in the case of Del Monte, they used a temporary service to, I guess, I don't know, insulate them from getting in trouble first.
Yeah, the temp company is called Mexico. That's the name of the temp company.
But they're investigating the temporary service. They're saying that they might have actually supplied people with
that's such a big load. That is such a colossal load. I'm not saying the temp company didn't provide the service initially. But, yeah, what do you think? That the manager from Del Monte goes wandering around the street looking for people? Of course they came through some agency. But, I mean, we're also not idiots. Come on. And, again, I understand that other countries have terrible economies. Other countries have, there are certain companies, El Salvador comes to mind, where there are death squads. There are people who flee to this country because their lives are in danger or their livelihood suffers. I understand that. But let's also be honest. If you wander through some companies, especially in the agricultural or horticultural fields, so to speak, we all know that if you are in a business like that, or if you are at a place like that, that any number of the people you are surrounded by simply aren't legal employees. And clearly the people of the Del Monte plant, whether they got them from a temp agency or not, they must have known. You know what I mean? I mean, when you're paying a guy like $2 an hour and he doesn't speak any English, it doesn't seem like you've got to be a real Mensa to be able to put two and two together.
Well, I was just saying, that's how they're getting around the law anyway.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that continues. I think the days of getting around that particular law are going to be coming to an end, my friend.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Down here in Woodburn, I mean, about half the people are illegal. So
no, I mean, look, and I come. My hometown is the same way. My hometown, the Tri-Cities, is very heavily dependent upon the agricultural business and upon harvesting and picking crops and all of that. And there's what they call a migrant workforce. Huge numbers of them illegal. I mean, I went to a private school where registration was ostensibly much more difficult than in a public school, and I still had a bunch of illegal aliens who were my classmates. Fine, doesn't matter to me. I mean, really, in the grand sort of moral sense, but this idea that somehow people did that. Well, we had no idea. How were we to know when we employed them that they were illegal? It's just a big load.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, man, I got to get out of here.
The feds are after me. All right, thank you.
Later.
I have to run. All right. Yeah, so that is one of our favorite phrases in this program is a transparent falsehood. And I think the people who run the Del Monte factory
I think they're not going to be able to use this this invisible X-15 shield of, the temp agency supplied these people who worked for one-third of the regular wage and spoke no English and didn't have any driver's licenses and seemed to spend a lot of time with phone cards calling back home to Mexico. We had no idea. I don't think that's going to hold up. So, just my two cents. I'll take a break after this. Tim Riley will come back with the AM 970 New News Hour. Still to come, CNN radio correspondent James Roop, Ed McCarthy, Scotty J with the top five rock songs it's no longer possible to listen to seriously, and more stories of airline horror. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Developed a drinking problem. I guess that's only a vision. That joke only works if you can look at me. It's the Ted Stryker drinking problem.
What did you do?
I poured my drink down the front of my shirt.
Is that coffee or water?
That's water. You ever seen the movie Airplane?
No.
What? I don't even care enough. You're going to be gone for the next couple of days. I'll yell at you Monday. I don't even care enough to get into it. I'll bring Fat Boy in here and have him. Yep. Hold on. Note to myself.
Fat Boy yell at me?
Yells. I don't even have the stomach to do it myself. Fat Boy yells at Sarah. Re-airplane. All right. I just don't have the energy. 503-733-2970. Is this from you, Tim, this thing about patriotic magnets?
'Tis the time of year for them.
Is it?
It is.
Is it indeed? Tis doesn't even make any sense. That is apostrophe T-I-S. That just doesn't even make any sense even as far as contractions go, because not only are you contracting, you're dropping the I and then you're contracting the two words into one. It seems like you're violating at least one rule of the commonly agreed upon English language there.
That may be so, but it still is the time of the year for patriotic magnets.
I suppose. You know whose fault this is? Illegal immigrants, Tim.
We're going to talk about them in just a moment.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is the quite legally employed Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Portland Mayor Potter coaxed the loony left and brings national shame to Portlanders everywhere. Well, now it's beginning to look like all his PR is being handled by 18-year-olds at Reed College. Because his statement on yesterday's immigration and custom raid,
he says a custom raid designed just to order.
I am angered by this morning's arrest by federal officials of approximately 150 Portland residents. They're not residents, Mayor. They're illegal. Who are working at a local produce company. I certainly understand why federal officials executed criminal warrants against these individuals who sold and stole Social Security numbers. But to go after these local workers who are here to support their families while filling the demands of local businesses illegally and below minimum wage for their labor is a bad policy.
I don't understand this. I don't understand.
He is kowtowing to the lunatic left on this one. And he's insane.
He really is.
I mean, what did the... Well, let's think about this first. What has this mayor done? Well, he managed to get elected, and he posed for a couple of photo ops. And other than that, he really hasn't done much of anything. I kind of like beer anyway.
I was just thinking about that.
He ran for office, and nobody ever saw him again.
I don't really know, and maybe I'm wrong about this. I'm the first to admit that maybe I follow the career of Tom Potter like some do. I don't really know what he's done. I mean, I'm sure he must have done something.
He was a cop at one time.
I guess that's about
it. Apparently, he doesn't know what law and order is about.
I know he's really strong. Well, I was just going to say, I know he's really strong on the police tip. I know he's all the more cops on the streets and more benefits for police and increased wages for police and so forth. You would think that as a guy who was a cop and who ran so strongly on the law and order platform, which I'm pretty sure he did, that he would have at least some tenuous grasp of this. The idea that he is outraged by the fact that they went and busted a bunch of people who are illegals.
Who stole and sold social security numbers.
And look, and I'm not one to get on the whole. You know the show. Not like we shouldn't. Not like we have to tie everything into 9/11. But really, it seems like we all ought to be on the same page, right?
Yeah.
It's a country, and moving forward here legally, it seems like we all ought to be in agreement or not. In, I hate to use this phrase, a post 9/11 era, it seems like it either ought to be illegal to buy and traffic in false identification and social security numbers, or it ought not to be.
Right.
If it's going to be illegal, it's illegal, and you can't do it.
In order to be a resident, you must be a citizen. There are no two ways about it, Mr. Mayor. You clearly need some sort of lobotomy.
It's beyond my ability to even sort of be, I'm not saying I can't be upset about it, I can't even really wrap my mind around the fact that the mayor of Oregon, that in a federal, a publicly elected official,
who was a police officer who upheld the law, as far as we know,
that he would just be outraged by this. I mean, it makes no sense at all. And you're right that this is absolutely, this is totally pandering to the wine and cheese kink FM crowd. The kink.com crowd probably doesn't care. The kink.com
crowd. They're probably at the swingers club over by your place.
Busy walking into the Ace of Hearts with a towel over one shoulder and a duffel bag over the other, wearing a leather miniskirt.
No,
but this is clearly pandering to the to the West Hills crowd who say they're comfortably ensconced in their houses, paying the person who comes to clean their place like 14 cents a day or whatever. So has there been any? I mean, has his office made any comment beyond this?
Well, let's see. I'll read the rest of it. Our nation would be better served if this kind of energy was focusing on creating a comprehensive approach to immigration. Well, it would be if these companies were busted for hiring them.
I mean, I think we have a comprehensive approach to immigration. The comprehensive approach is you get in line, and as Dennis Miller said, you sign the guest book, and then you move along.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea
you don't work in some clandestine factory that nobody knows about that's tucked away in some slum area.
And it was very telling, by the way, that none of the stories about this Del Monte bust have mentioned in any way what's going to be done to the company. They haven't mentioned any fines. They haven't mentioned any sort of levies. They haven't mentioned any sort of sanctions or injunctions that are going to be leveled against this Del Monte company, undoubtedly owned by a bunch of fat white bastards sitting around a table somewhere trying to scheme how they can raise their profits by paying people subhuman wages, none of which is going to stem the problem of illegal immigration. I mean, it just makes no sense to me at all.
So, Mr. Mayor, somebody made you look like a dope by agreeing to go along with this stupid statement. Even those on the left. I mean, you got to be, way, way on the left.
It really does make you wonder if he wrote that statement himself, if it even approximates his actual feelings or beliefs on this, or if it was written by somebody else and he literally just has some sort of a stamp signature that he sticks on it before it goes out the door. And you're totally right when it sounds like it was written by some a-hole from Evergreen College. So, good God almighty. I mean, there really are...
Mr. Matt, I hope you know how stupid this makes us you look.
Not
the rest of us.
Well, but I was going to say, specifically, it makes him look dumb. In the abstract, it makes us look retarded to the rest of the country. I mean, it really...
Well, this is the first thing he's ever done since he's been mayor.
Really.
The whole thing...
It is agreed with this lunacy.
The whole thing just drives me crazy.
Well, do we know from whence the bust derived? I mean, where did the bust come from? Was it a federal bust? Was it a federal raid?
Yes.
And do we know who instigated that?
Apparently, they've been under investigation for quite some time. Let's see here. ICE officials raided the office.
Is Oregon another one of those nutcase states where you can get a driver's license if you're an illegal alien?
Probably. You can get anything, really.
You know what I do? You know, from now on...
The investigation began 6 months ago after officials received tips. Investigators then...
Tips? Look at the tips. Use your goddamn eyes.
An apple peeling.
Yes.
A piece of a carrot.
I mean... For the love of sweet Christ almighty.
Up to 90 employees had fraudulent and forged social security cards.
I'm stunned.
Big green cards were issued as well.
Can't believe that.
And they were using the social security numbers of elderly and dead people.
Yeah.
Yet the mayor is upset about them being arrested for doing this.
How dare you.
You're an idiot.
God damn, that really is a colossally boneheaded thing for him to say.
What a...
We have people who listen to this program, and we got, what's his name? I think Mark, I don't know if Mark the Brit is in this camp, but we got people who email this program
There are people who are immigrants who are on visas, who are work visas or whatever, student visas, that have been waiting like 6, 7, 8, 9 years to become citizens of the United States. So the idea that the idea that somehow Tom Potter is outraged.
I am angered.
I'm angered. How dare we crack down on people who are selling fraudulent Social Security numbers?
Dead people. My God. My heart goes up to these families. Did your heart go up to the dead people whose Social Security numbers were stolen by these idiots?
You know what I'm going to do the next time I get fired? The next time I get fired and I don't have a job, I'm just going to go sneak into someone else's house. And I'm going to illegally live in their basement. And then once they discover me living in their basement illegally, I'm going to demand that they continue to give me food, shelter, and I get to pose as one of their children. And then when the cops come and try to kick me out of someone else's house for living there illegally, I'm going to demand that Tom Potter be outraged on my behalf. And I'm going to demand that the city allow me to continue living illegally in the basement of someone else's house. Because, you know, that seems to be the way we deal with things here.
Jesus Christ. Oh, he wants to help the families affected.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thanks. You're a real pal, Tom. Hi, Dave. What's up?
Hey, you know, it always cracks me up. Whenever Tom Potter misses out on, you know, being an attention whore, as he usually does.
He's never mentioned, usually.
Snivels. You know, he missed out on this one. He didn't get any FaceTime with the feds before they made their raid.
I'm sorry?
He didn't get any FaceTime with the feds before the raid.
Okay, I don't understand. What is your... I might be missing your point here.
Well, the reason Tom Potter's so upset is that he didn't get his moment in the limelight prior to...
Are you saying that he wanted to be standing outside the Del Monte warehouse, like, you know, as the illegals were let out?
Exactly.
And handing out Kleenexes.
Yeah, well, the next one, ought to be the Fred Meyer warehouse in Clackamas, where they employ about 600 illegal aliens to unload and load trucks.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me... I don't want anybody to walk away from this program thinking that this is like a repository of John Birch's or something. It had nothing like that at all, but it seems like we really have to, at some point, have to start having a rational approach to this. And if you're going to let American companies just continue to employ people who are not only here illegally, who are already engaging in the sale of fraudulent documents, it's, you know what it is? Here's what the... Thank you, sir. I appreciate the call. Here's the thing about the United States. We've got real problems in this country, I say to no one's surprise, and we've got real economic problems. And I'm not just talking about illegal immigrants. We got a real problem.
We have resident dopes who have been here for a long time who can't find jobs.
I mean, we got all kinds of morons, many of them in my family, who can't find jobs. We got 40 million people who don't have health care. We got $1 trillion deficit. We've got a trade imbalance. We've got
people working, you know, a half dozen part-time jobs to make ends meet.
There's people that, there's people that I know. There's people that Tim knows. There's people that Sarah knows. Who have people say, well, you know, Americans are finding jobs left and right. Yeah, you know what? Americans are finding 3 or 4 jobs that they have to have at once just to try to take care of their family. We've got failing infrastructures. We've got underfunded schools. We've got potholes that can't be fixed. We've got a lot of problems here. Our country is like a ship that is out in the middle of the ocean, and the ship's electrical system is going down, the ship's navigational system is failing, the ship is overrun by rats, the ship is running out of food, the ship has got all kinds of problems with it. And you can't solve any of those problems if at the same time you're trying to deal with water that is coming over the bow. You've got to stop water from flooding the ship before you can deal with any of the other problems. And, you know, and the idea that we can somehow increase security in a country where you can't even control your own borders is just retarded. To a degree that it eludes my ability to elucidate it even further.
And it doesn't matter if you can control your border or not, if you have employers like Del Monte hiring all these people. I mean, I can imagine 1 or 2 slipping by, but over 600 of these people?
And the idea that somehow the managers of the Del Monte factory are just blind to what the average moron on this program can spot is insane. You will never, ever, ever be able to stem illegal immigration if you've got big companies in America run by fat white men who are willing to pay incrementally more than those people would make in their countries of origin.
And then having them scrub their toilets at home.
You know, exactly. I will
get you both ways.
And I will also tell you this. You know, this is exactly like the war on drugs. This is why the war on drugs will never be won in this country. Somebody made this example about the war on drugs one time. I got a ballpoint pen in my hand right here. Now, let's imagine that this pen costs $1 to make, all right? Let's say that this pen is cocaine. Let's say this pen costs $1 to make. What if I could make this ballpoint pen for $1, and I could go sell it for $17,000. Do you suppose that there is anything that could stop people from doing that? If you could make this pen in your living room for a dollar and go sell it on the street for 17 grand, do you suppose that anything would stop people from doing that? No. There will be a class of people, and nothing, no prison sentence, no death sentence, no threat of deportation would be enough to stop them from selling this pen, because you can make $17,000 on it. It's the same thing with the lead. Until you take away the incentive, in other words, until you legalize drugs, you will never stop the drug problem. Well, until you stop companies like Del Monte from hiring people who are clearly, obviously, and patently illegal aliens and engaging in continued illegal behavior while they are here, and contributing, by the way, to the financial implosion of this fading republic of ours, you will never, ever, ever stop the border problem. Build all the fences, build all the walls you want, have all the Minutemen, have all the Arizona busybodies you can possibly muster down there. It's not going to stop. Not going to stop until you start jailing a bunch of fat white American bankers and business people. That's when it will stop. So, the love of sweet Christ Almighty. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, it's Grant. I'm a longtime listener. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I happen to be married to a formerly illegal immigrant, and I'm a grandson of a formerly illegal immigrant, and I got to give my two cents on this, that until you curb the lazy and the pride of Americans, you will never get rid of immigration on this scale. Reason being that these people are doing jobs that Americans are too proud to do for what these people will do it for.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt you. I will agree with you on half, because that's half of this point. Because that is one of these things, one of these phrases that you hear all the time, which is, well, illegal immigrants do jobs that Americans don't want to do. I think that is partially true. I think Americans don't want to do those jobs for substandard wages.
Well, let's just put it to you like
anybody
this, Rick. You're from Kennewick, aren't you? You're from over that way. Well, I happen to have in-laws out there who are, you know, pickers. That's what they do for their living. And you don't see a whole lot of pale faces out there in the fields. And these people that that do this work insane hours, and you would never catch an American.
No, I don't disagree with that at all. I completely agree with you on that. I'm even very clear about that. I mean, people look at it. I'm not going to sit here and go on and on and about my bleeding heart bona fides, but people listen to the show. They know where we come from on most things. I will say this. I will agree that most of those jobs are jobs that Americans don't want to do for that wage. I absolutely understand that, but I also know this. Look, everybody's got a price. And you know what? There are unemployed people in this country that, if offered a decent job at a decent wage, will take that job. Obviously, they're not going to take it for slave wages, nor should they be expected to, nor should anybody be expected to. The only people who will take those jobs for slave wages are people who have absolutely no choice.
Well, and until you've lived on a Mexican village and seen exactly what these people endure on a day-to-day just to get by, never mind get ahead, it's really tough for us as Americans to imagine ever having to live in that situation.
No, absolutely. There are places in this world that have absolutely crushing, unbelievable, bone-grinding poverty. There is no getting around that fact.
So, until we curb the lazy and the pride, I don't think we're going to see an end to this. And until we have corporate liability for this type of labor, indentured servitude,
We're talking about corporate liability. That is the point.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And don't get me wrong. When I say that I don't blame illegal immigrants, I mean, obviously, look, I mean, if you're here and you're engaging in ongoing illegal and criminal activity on a scale that, you know, is massive, I mean, there's got to be a penalty for that. On the other hand, the reason that all of this happens is because...
the lack of corporate responsibility.
Yes, exactly. It's because the American government does not jail the fat-ass bank owners and business owners.
And the want for cheap, you know, handmade goods. It's something that's built into the economy at this point. It's almost institutional.
I also don't buy that, by the way. I also don't buy the fact... that's another thing you hear. And I'm really not picking on you, but I also don't believe this idea that, well, this happens because Americans demand low prices for things. Really?
Well, why do we outsource everything to China?
And have you seen the average idiot suburbanite driving an SUV that costs $100 to fill? Americans don't demand cheap prices for anything. Americans
on oil
pay
because they have no control over it. For every other consumer goods, yes.
Yeah, but being Americans pay vastly over. Americans pay $2 for a bottle of water. Americans don't demand cheap prices for anything. Americans.
Well, why do you think we have a Walmart every five blocks in this nation now? It's because there's a demand for cheap crap.
Well,
and there's a market, they will build, you know, a supply chain for.
I think if there's something cheap right next to you, I think that Americans will buy it. But I think one visit to a Starbucks will indicate that high price does not turn an American off from buying anything.
Well, Rick, we agree to disagree on this one, man. I just had to chime in. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
All right. Just saying. Look, Americans like cheap stuff as much as anybody else. But the idea that you can make something incredibly expensive and Americans will no longer buy it, check out your local Regal Cinema. See how many people are going in there and refusing to pay high ticket prices.
And what about the people in the SUVs who are paying $100 to fill these suckers up?
I'm just saying, I mean,
there's no mass protest about it.
Americans continue to pay too much for crap that ought to cost less. That's just a fact of life. America, high price, and I'm lumping myself in there. I'm no different than anybody else. Americans continue to pay too much for stuff that they ought to pay less for. So the idea that somehow if we raised prices of stuff, Americans are going to quit buying it is just ridiculous. I mean, that's American businesses found out a long time ago that we have rings through the nose in this country, and we will continue to pay way too much for stuff that ought to be cheaper. We're Americans. We love to waste our money. It's what we do. You know, I have friends of mine that are like have $30,000, $40,000, $45,000 in consumer credit card debt. Why? Pay too much for crap that they don't need in the first place. So raising prices on stuff will never stop an American from giving you his money. In fact, as we all know by watching the Home Shopping Network or seeing things labeled Dolce & Gabbana, charging way, way, way too much for something will just ensure that Americans want to buy it even more. It's the way Americans operate. You know,
like those widescreen TVs.
Exactly. This is reasonably priced. I don't want it. Give me something that has an 18,000% markup. I'll buy that.
I want to see the fat, bald newsman on widescreen TV.
For the love of God. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. See how relatable we are today? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. I'm not sure where you're pulling your source of the story from, but the Oregonian was saying that there was some managers from the plant and some managers from the employment office in the Midwest that were arrested for this.
No, I'm sure that there's three. So, I'm sure that there's three mid-level floor managers that are going to get nailed.
But the guys at the top, the guy got to continue to do this.
Yeah, you know, the guy who runs Del Monte. You call me when they come and nail that guy who clearly knows what's going on at his factory.
Right, because the company's going to say, "Well,
they'll find their scooter Libby."
Oh yeah. Oh,
they'll operate on his own. And
oh yeah, there'll be a patsy. There'll be some local guy who gets nailed for it. But, you know, the guy at the top who clearly has an idea of how his companies operate will be shielded by his many underlings, and that guy will never be handcuffed and stuffed into a cell, which is what he deserves.
Right. Well, and the other point that I wanted to make was that part of the reason why I think a lot of the illegal immigrants are willing to make a hair more than what they were making at home or even twice what they were making at home here is because one thing that they also brought with them is they live multiple families in one dwelling because that's how they've always lived. That's the way their culture is. They always, you know, as you grow up, you tend to stay with your family. And the biggest example of that is, and I hate to...
And so many European families who came here for the first and second generation.
Right. Well, yeah.
That's a moot point.
I know that the people always want to go to like the example of a Mexican family or a Latin family. You know, Italians did the same thing.
Polish families.
Yeah. I mean, that's Russians did the same thing. Yeah.
Where I see it most often though is I live in Hillsboro and it's a very large Hispanic population there, but there will be one duplex with 14 cars outside, and it's because it's five families living in two units. But they're used to that. They like that, and that's why they
I don't think they like that.
Cars. I don't think they really crave that. I don't think everybody... Well, I dream of growing up and living in a one-bedroom apartment with my 16 nieces. I don't think anybody... That's like the American
the
dream.
Generation, not the generation that, that is born here and grows up here, but the, you know... It's ingrained into their history.
No, it's more of an economic.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an institutional frugality in some cultures that is born in by decades of living in a lower social strata. I don't think I think that is the case in all ethnic groups when they are at that point in their assimilation into the American culture. And as Tim pointed out, in the early 20th century, if you go to New York City, you would absolutely have seen the same thing. You would have seen Russian families, Jewish families, European families of all, you know, and they were, you know, shoved 15 into an apartment. Yeah.
It was all across the board. Yeah. So.
All right. We got it right. Thank you.
Oh, and I wanted to congratulate Rick that rant that you had that lasted for about five minutes ago, just like Dan Snow.
Which rant was this? What was it about?
It was about this topic, but it was where you just basically went off the rocker.
Well,
you said it just like watching the old Dennis Miller show.
Well, you know, there's just stuff that doesn't make any freaking sense in this country, and I was making this observation yesterday about how You know, and again, everybody who listens to this program knows, you know, where we stand on most social and political issues. But by the same token, this stuff just doesn't make any goddamn sense. And I'm not going to be hemmed in by somebody's previously existing notion of what my ideology or belief system ought to be. So, all right, there you go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Right. It's going to be a fun day, I can already tell. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Yeah, this case demonstrates two glaring problems with the immigration policy. Okay? Arresting all these people, that is the enforcement part everybody wants to see. But nobody wants to see the faces of the people that are having the rules enforced upon.
I'm sorry, what do you mean?
Okay, everybody's crying about these 600 people that are being, you know, was arrested at Del Monte's yesterday, okay?
Right. The mayor is crying.
That's right. But that's the face of enforcement. I mean, these people are here with their families. I mean, but if people want the laws enforced, they're going to have to realize that these are the people that it's being enforced upon. Understand?
Yes, I'm not sure I grasp your point.
Enforcement is ugly.
Well, no, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. I don't think anybody... Look, no one is, like, coming out and saying, you know what we need is we need more poor brown people rounded up and put in jail for things. No one is saying that. No one's a big fan of that.
Yeah.
But I guess what we're saying is that this is... there is no rational, conceivable argument that says illegal immigration makes America better or makes it run
exactly
better.
So what's shocking to me are the people that are for this whole immigration policy, they just want a massive amount of little brown people to be a subservient class to them. And that's all this is.
Well, I do. There is a large segment of America, and again, many of them white business owners, who like the idea of having a ready supply of cheap labor that is either that they can pay a substandard wage to, and that is either beholden to them economically or out of fear of being deported. I do believe that that is the case. There's a whole lot of American businesses that love, and by the way, and this is not just about illegal immigrants. As we all look, and I'm not comparing the plight of the radio worker to the plight of the illegal immigrant, but let me just say this. We all know in radio that there is... Look, in radio, all of us have had the experience of working for a company where you felt very much like you couldn't complain, you couldn't bitch about anything, you couldn't raise your voice about anything because you wanted your job, you needed your job, and you knew that if you complained a little too loudly, and it's probably this way for most people's jobs, you feel like if you bitch too much about a working condition you don't like, that they're going to blow you out, and they're going to get some college kid who will come and do your job for half your wage. Employees who are afraid to complain are the best kind of employee if you're a business owner. If you run a business, you want employees who are terrified to complain about anything. So, yeah, there's absolutely a huge contingent of white-owned businesses in this country who like having poor brown illegal help because they know that they won't complain about anything.
But and the side that is espousing this policy tends to be of the liberal persuasion, or the, you know, the left, as they call them. But... don't they realize...
by their scientific name.
Yeah. That's right. Can't they see that they're what they're doing by this policy?
Yes. All right. Well, we're going to move on. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, when we come back, we'll be talking about a nutty squirrel and a power outage. Also, a drunken Lake Oswego man on a golf cart.
That's a squirrel on water skis right there. That's a water-seeing squirrel, Brick. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Best day ever. Hey, would you like to buy some patriotic magnets?
About now, you bet. Who are they made by, I wonder?
They're by kids for kids, Tim. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Back after this, we'll get more of your calls. Oh, listen to that. That's what I'm talking about. We got more of your calls on the way. More news from Tim Riley. Later on, we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Also, Ed McCarthy. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, top five rock songs you can no longer take seriously.
Yes. This is from houseofmagnets.com. Was this a spam that you received? I always get stuff like that. Houseofmagnets.com. It is the season for patriotic magnets. You can buy inspirational magnets. Apparently, it's a calendar magnet blowout. It's a picture of the whitest, fattest man you can imagine, hugging his Carrie Underwood-looking wife. Sitting, I swear to Christ, on a perfectly manicured lawn in front of a white picket fence. And on their porch, a huge American flag blowing in the wind. And then it says here, these patriotic magnets have been a spectacular success. Every single one of my contacts I've seen recently, oh, these are a sales tool.
Yes.
Has the magnets on the refrigerator. This has been one of the easiest and cheapest marketing tools I've used to get my name and face in front of all my contacts on a daily basis.
Always be closing.
Seriously. This, by the way, is exactly what Betsy Ross had in mind when she was creating the flag. This is what Francis Scott Key was thinking when he created the national anthem, that someday some idiot Amway salesman would use them as he traveled door to door like some sort of a plague on foot, coming to your house, knocking on your door, and shoving a cheap ass flag magnet into your hand as some sort of weird sales device so he can come back and continue to annoy you and your family. Good God! All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So on to more pleasant things, shall we?
What, more pleasant than the last half hour? That doesn't seem possible.
Yes. Iraq has imposed an indefinite curfew in Baghdad. Nobody can go out at all.
Spreading democracy.
For any reason. Don't even ask.
Really, what is there to go out for in Iraq? What is it that you're sitting around your Iraqi, whatever it is you're living in now, presuming your home has been blown into small little pieces? What is it?
Well, they don't collect baseball cards. They collect body parts.
It's not like there's a galleria down the street or something. I mean, really, where is it that you're going to go? You're just going to move yourself from one pile of tinder to another? I mean, I really don't understand. That family has a better donkey. Let's go hang out with them and stare at it for a while.
Meanwhile, back here in the good old USA, home of patriotic magnets, Paris Hilton's aunt is talking about her jailed niece with Greta Van Susteren during Fox's Off the Record program. Kyle Richards says her family's very close and her niece's brush with the law has been very difficult.
This has had such an enormous impact on our entire family. No one could ever have imagined going through something like this. I would definitely say it's been the hardest thing since losing our mom.
Who is this person that I'm hearing right now?
It's a close family member named Kyle Richards.
All right, well,
who no one ever heard of before today.
Was that a man or a woman?
That's a woman.
Kyle?
Named Kyle?
K-Y-L-E. Is that not...
I think chicks with guy names are kind of hot. It doesn't really work the other way, but a girl with a guy name is kind of sexy. Well, she's a Hilton. She probably looks bony and pokey.
Kyle Richards, explained how her niece got famous.
You know, when she was younger, they'd say, oh, she's famous for doing nothing, you know. Well, she was, you know, she was a pretty girl, you know, going around New York City, and people knew who she was and knew her family was, so that kind of got everyone's attention.
Uh-huh. All right.
I think the PR people might have helped out a little bit.
Yes, yeah, just a tiny bit. When they weren't working for Tom Potter. I am going to say this. Let's see. Let me just getting my email thing up here. I do have a great idea. This is what we should do. So, you know, when somebody like Paris Hilton gets into trouble, this is how we should fill all those jobs in places like the Del Monte Fruit Factory. It should be celebrities who, you don't want to go to jail, fine. You're not going to pick up trash, fine. You know what? You're going to go chop olives for $4 an hour for 40 hours a week, you stupid. That's how we can solve it. You know what? And then we'll put a camera there. We'll charge people like $1.99 a day to watch it on their webcams. So you balance the stupid freaking budget. It takes care of all of her problems at once.
Yeah. Kylie Richards explains how Paris felt about her sentencing.
She thought that it was extremely harsh and unfair for a traffic violation.
Freaking who? A traffic violation. That's the talking point, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they've been told to say over and over and over again. That's like how they were. That's like how the Republicans to this day will talk about Watergate as a third-rate burglary, as though that sums up the entire thing. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello.
Rick, you might as well take away my sounder. I'm glad you did.
Oh, wait, hold on. Is this George in Wilsonville?
Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
Yes,
no, this is... What? It's never been more appropriate.
Illegal aliens and homosexuals.
All right, there we go.
I'm afraid I must disappoint my illegal alien friends because I know that there's no job that an American citizen won't do, provided, just as you said, that their wages are commensurate. And the reason they're not good wages right now is because there's a vast pool of peasant labor coming from the South.
Well, that's the thing. The American, and I always sit and, I mean, I this is going to keep coming up without us trying to. So, okay, I'm not going to actively try to keep raising this this immigration rate at the Del Monte place over and over again today, because the story is going to keep coming back today whether I push it or not.
Yeah.
So, but I will say this, that the American, it's not like I'm some financial analyst or like I got a degree in economic theory or whatever, but it does seem to me that in a nation like ourselves, I mean, capitalism is supply and demand. There is that you have a closed economic system in which, As libertarian idiots never get tired of pointing out to us, when the market system and the market forces determine what items cost and what people are paid. And, of course, if you take illegal aliens and illegal workers out of the equation, these jobs would not be filled. Companies would be forced to raise their wages, and Americans would take those jobs, and they would be paid a wage that was such that they wouldn't have to neglect their families or have five different jobs to try to pay the goddamn rent.
Thank you for putting it so eloquently, because I hate that line of arguing that, nobody wants to do these jobs.
Of course,
they don't want to do them for $4 an hour.
Nobody wants to do the jobs. Nobody wants to take a job where you work full-time and are still below the poverty
in a slaughterhouse.
No, of course nobody wants those jobs. And the only reason, I'm sorry, you just triggered the thing now, and of course nobody wants those jobs. Nobody wants to take a job that takes you 40 hours a week to work, but it still doesn't pay you enough to actually take care of yourself, let alone take care of your freaking family. And we all know people who are the working poor. We all know people who are perma temps. I have a good friend.
I've been the working poor, and in construction I've seen roofing jobs go from $24 an hour down to $12.
Down to 10, where I live over on the west side, they have this huge construction project going up, 500 apartments, and there are signs that have been banged into the ground saying construction jobs available, $10.
And the only reason that people are now, the only reason that companies now can offer effectively what is, it is effectively full-time employment, meaning it's a job that takes up so many of your hours every week that you can't really have another job, and yet still have people working at or below the poverty wage, is because there is the artificial release valve of illegal immigrants.
Right.
To which companies can turn, which they can use as leverage against American workers to lower the wage. It is an unfair system that is unfairly and, I would say, punitively punishing the American worker.
It's also bad for the Mexicans, because if we could hold the Mexican government to account and force them in some way through economics to treat their people better. In fact, we're doing the opposite. We're shipping our cheaply subsidized corn down to Mexico and unemploying millions of Mexican subsistence farmers, so they have no choice but to try to get up here. So if we changed our whole GATT NAFTA policy that Clinton and Bush are so in love with, they love this whole illegal immigrant problem, because it does exactly what you say. It drives everybody's wages down. It's good for corporations and the oligarchs. And meanwhile, everybody suffers. The Mexican people suffer. The workers here at home suffer. So the best thing to do, I'm not anti-Mexican. I love the Mexican culture, love Mexican people. Best thing that we could do as a country and as a nation is force the corrupt government of Mexico to address their social ills so that they wouldn't have to come here. They don't really want to be here, most of them.
Yeah, but of course, if you do that, then the American businesses are going to have to start paying a decent wage to people, and then, then the walls of Jericho are going to fall. So.
Exactly.
All right, thank you,
sir. Thank you.
All right.
And that would spell the end of California, which is an economic superpower due to all the slavery.
Well, they have the seventh largest economy in the world. Largely because they don't have to pay people what they would in a fair system. It is injecting an artificial variable into the American economic equation. The American economic equation is set up in its simplicity to work fairly and really beautifully, where, again, goods are sold for whatever the market will bear. The prices on goods are raised until Americans refuse to pay for them, and then the price doesn't go up any further. The market helps determine a price. So what is with wages? Wages are lowered until Americans can't take the job, and then the wages have to go back up again. But when you introduce this artificial external variable, such as the threat of immigrant wage, and by the way, the immigrant workforce, as I previously noted, is a workforce that you can always get and you can always keep through the threat of deportation. They are afraid to. You're never going to see. I mean, illegal immigrant workers can't unionize. Illegal workers can't rally together to demand better wages, better living conditions. I mean, it's like, it really is.
as much as I have a problem with American unions in a lot of ways, one of the things that American unions did was to mandate a 40-hour work week, to mandate safe living conditions, to mandate the end of child labor. Illegal aliens are never going to be able to get any of those things, so it's the worst of all possible worlds. They have subhuman living conditions, they're making less than they ought to, and the American companies can use those illegal aliens to shaft American workers out of a real, honest, decent living wage, which results in all kinds of people that we know in our community having to hold down three jobs so they can try to take care of their family. It's just ridiculous. For the love of God.
Well, let's go talk to Dan Rather.
Sir, let's talk about Katie Couric and her $14 million. You know, they ought to hire an illegal alien to do that job.
All right.
Dan wants to talk about Paris Hilton.
All right.
He said Paris Hilton is not good for the news industry.
Even the New York Times, arguably the best newspaper in the world, one of the best newspapers in the world, had a front page story about Paris Hilton on Saturday. This is something we need to be concerned about because it matters to the country.
No, it doesn't. Who does it matter to? Have you heard one person other? Let me ask you this. Have you heard one person who doesn't work in the media complaining about the direction of the media lately? The only time you ever hear anybody complaining about the content of the news or the content of a newspaper or the content of a news broadcast, it is someone who works in, or more likely, someone who used to work in the news media but was kicked out. Somebody who was fired from a newspaper complaining about the state of American newspapers. No one who buys newspapers or watches television is complaining about the content of the news shows.
Most people in the media are complaining about the content in the snack machines, though. Yeah. I hear more complaints about that than the stories actually being covered.
Who cares? Talking about Paris Hilton. Why don't you shut it, Dan Rather?
Yes, stories like Paris Hilton give new meaning to old phrases.
Now, if we keep going this way, we will give a new context to that old Humphrey Bogart line, "We'll always have Paris."
We're not done yet. He has some harsh criticism of CBS. This is Dan Rather speaking, Mr. Moonbees, if you're listening right now. He has some harsh criticism about you, Les. He says the CBS Evening News made the mistake of leaning on feature stories.
Network news has changed. At one time, places nobody's like watching. CBS, they were the champions of hard news. These days, they don't know what hard news is, the top corporate leadership. They know about entertainment, but they don't know about news.
He says CBS has Les Moonves admitted that he made a mistake.
He said that in retrospect, it was a mistake to load up the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric with features.
They loaded her with features.
He loaded her with snacks, from the look of it. They loaded her with a lot of Cheetos and Ring Dings for several months before she took the gig. And then a lot of white skirts. That's what they loaded her with. No, I'm sorry.
Ted Rather
said a cheap shot. They loaded her with carbs.
Well, Rather says if he was still at CBS, he would know how to pull in the younger viewers.
With the international situation being what it is,
the tune of a hickory
stick. Emphasize foreign news, emphasize important news, emphasize quality news. And I will tell you this, if you put Oprah in front of me and Entertainment Tonight behind me, I'll win for you any market in the country.
Yeah, we're done with him.
I don't even know what that, no, hold on, no. What does that even mean?
Hey, I think he's talking about lead-ins.
So is he actually saying in that statement, and I know that we're just doing, this is total shop talk, and I know that, here's a statement I'm going to make, and this is neither good nor bad, this is just sort of the way it is, and again, I'm not saying this is a great thing, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's just, you know, whatever. We do a lot of shop talk here, a lot of talk about television and radio and the broadcasting industry.
There's free candy in the snack room.
Oh, is there really?
Yes, there is. Go get some right now. We'll wait. Mike and Ike. I already gave you some Mike and Ike's.
Hold on.
Probably gone by now. No, I'm speaking truthfully. Free candy.
I cannot believe he's actually going to get free candy.
I can. What's free actually, is free. I had some Mike and Ike's earlier.
Is there something special about the Mike and Ike?
What's special about them is that they're free.
Uh-huh.
We don't know where they came from, but we don't ask questions about free things. I'll save the worst and left.
See, there you go.
But I will say one good thing about the media, since there's so few people working in it anymore, all the free stuff stays longer in the kitchen.
No free candy for us. Normally in a radio station, you put them any kind of food, any sort of item, and it's immediately gone, set upon by vultures. Not anymore. It's not like
The vultures have moved on to other businesses.
It's not like
they may be.
Not like Kyle and Tigra or whoever it is in the morning on Moving are going to be here eating anything.
That's true.
I need tungsten to live. What was my point? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, anyway, so for good or bad, I mean, for whatever it is, we do have a large contingent of other Portland media people who listen to the show.
Because they'd love to be doing it.
Well, that's true. A, because we do have a degree of freedom, and a lot of that's because of CBS, and also just because it's the way the show is designed. But we have a degree of freedom on this program that most others, certainly the vast number of radio people working in Portland don't have. And I think a lot of people working in media, period, don't have. So there is a certain degree of that we do a kind of show that I think a lot of people would like to do if they were able to. And I'm not trying to brag about that. It's just a fact. And also because we do talk a lot about the media, and media people never get tired of just doing a big wank fest about themselves. So... As we show on a constant daily basis.
Here. Nobody gets tired of wanking around here.
No, that is true. You've been reading The Sun too much this morning.
I think I have been.
Anywho, it's like when you'd make the underclassmen dress as girls. Anyway, what was my point? Blah 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 blah. So I'm just saying, I'm not really apologizing. I'm just saying that is what we do. We do talk a lot about the media here. So let's go back to this Dan Rather thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like he was saying that he was complaining that there was too much fluff, not enough hard news.
Yes.
And that it's all about hard news and that's what the people want. Okay, but is he now saying, he says, if you put Oprah behind me and Entertainment Tonight in front of me, I'll win?
Yes.
So what is he saying? Is he now saying that the news content itself is irrelevant?
Pretty much.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm glad he's finally getting on board with that.
This is comparable to the last couple of TV shows that Bob Hope did. They put him in time zones when there was something good in front of him and something good after him. So he was kind of like sandwiched in between. So he could do his traditional little spiel.
These are just people who are just, they are from a bygone era. And I don't mean that to sound snarky, and I know it does. I don't mean it to sound snippy, and I know it does. But you know what? Times change. Things change. Nothing stays the same. We are living in times of flux. And as they say at every CBS staff meeting, as they say at every CBS conference and gathering, we're living in a time of upheaval in the broadcasting industry where the new media is shaking things up, and we've got to be more aggressive in trying to keep our market share. I mean, it's not 1960. People have got more than three choices on their television. And Dan Rather and people of his ilk are used to having a monopoly on the news and where people are going to get it. And that time is past, friend. The idea that you can de facto force people into sitting and watching your wrinkled ass on television to get the news, screw that. I mean, people are going to go, people listen to us, and that just sounds corny, but... People listen to us, and this program is, I don't want to say it's appointment listening, but, people consciously make an effort to listen to this program. They say, hey, Rick Emerson show's on, I gotta tune in. And they, or they find themselves listening, and they keep listening. And I'm really grateful for that, and I know that we all are, because you know what? There's a billion places now where people could be getting a dumb story, they could be hearing people talk about something, you could be reading some nitwit's blog somewhere, reading some thread war about Uwe Boll, you know what I mean? So it doesn't... I'm really grateful and glad, and I never lose sight of the fact that people have other choices. So when they listen to the show, it means a lot to us. Dan Rather, he doesn't live in that world anymore. Dan Rather doesn't, he does not live in the now. Dan Rather lives in this fictitious or at least bygone time when he could just sort of assume he was going to get a 30 share. This is not the case anymore. So he just needs to go sit somewhere and
brush.
I was just going to say, he needs to go sit somewhere and do what everybody like Dan Rather does, which is go home and write a memoir about the golden days of news, and then, and then have sex with Faye Dunaway and die. So there you go. That's it. A little William Holden joke.
Going to do a little gardening.
Yes.
Is the season to do that? Watch a person power wash the gazebo. Gave up doing that yesterday.
Watch the crabgrass grow. Yeah, just sit there and write a book about how you once passed Edward R. Murrow in the hallway. That's what everybody like Dan Rather eventually does anyway, you know what I mean?
Well, Larry Birkhead gave his first primetime interview since officially being named the father of the late Anna Nicole Smith's baby. He spoke to Larry King in an hour-long interview about his life, about getting custody of 9-month-old Daniel Lynn.
It's like magic, You wake up every morning and you rush in and can't wait till she wakes up. Sometimes I kind of cheat and take a couple peeks. And when I hear her cry and those first sounds, I just take off running and can't wait to spend every minute I can with her.
Need a new wife. Bowen's turning to dust. I don't even know who that was in the background.
Larry King. Burkhead still, he's a little bit over in the air, up in the air. If any role Howard K. Stern will play in his daughter's life.
The answer is I don't consider him a stepfather.
And
I do think that Anna would want Howard to be, you know, a part of Daniel's life. And I'm going to respect everything unless someone shows me otherwise.
She does not need two daddies.
No.
You know, I have a copy of that book. I have Heather Has Two Mommies, and I have Daddy's Roommate, because they got taken off the shelves when I was living in Salt Lake City. And so I wanted to make sure I had a copy for future generations.
Maybe Smokey would like to give them away on Couple.
Sure, the housewives appreciate such a promotion. Never mind. Let's talk about Sicko, shall we? Michael Moore. The director of Fahrenheit 9/11 and Bowling for Columbine has a new film that takes aim at America's healthcare system. The film premiered in Sacramento. For whatever reason. Where director Michael Moore testified before. I don't know what's so funny.
These are stories that are representative of the evidence that exists. And the evidence says that we lose 18,000 Americans every year simply because they don't have a health insurance card.
Yes, comments?
No. This movie just already makes me angry. And don't get me wrong, I love Michael Moore. I really do. And I don't know that I would. I mean, I guess I would call him a hero. I mean, he is. I don't know if he's a role model as such, but I mean, he's certainly
a working class hero.
He's among the very best in the world at what he does. And I admire anybody who is among the very best at what they do. I admire anybody who has a theatrical flair for bombast. And who is a showman. I admire anybody who is sort of stylish about how they give a thumb in the eye to somebody. And as, again, people can pick fights with me all they want about this, but that's the same reason that I will always love Rush Limbaugh, because at once upon a time, he was the very best at what he did. He was funny. He was colorful. He was sort of confrontational, but in a great, hilarious, irreverent, entertaining way. He's just kind of a fat load now, but I mean, what are you going to do? But Michael Moore is the very best at what he does. You know, and so, but I just don't see any point in seeing this movie, because it's just going to confirm a bunch of crap I already know, and it's just going to make me angry. And I mean, and look, and I, don't get me wrong, I have health care, okay? I'm not going to lie about that. I am no longer, now for the vast majority of my 34 years, mm-hmm. I have been uncovered. I have been without a health care plan for the vast majority of my life. I'm not trying to blame that on anybody in particular. I went into an unstable career. I chose poorly. I chose poorly and continue to do so. I stayed in an industry that chooses not to offer health care to the vast majority of its employees, and I'm fully aware of that fact. And I live in a country where the government somehow does not see providing for the common defense as taking care of, oh, I don't know,
that
cancer.
That is taking away your freedom.
Oh, I know. It's true. People don't want to be defended, Tim.
No.
People don't want to be taken care of.
No.
So, I mean,
that's creeping socialism.
Are you a fellow traveler? Have you swallowed the red bait?
If we could just prove, here's the thing. If we could just prove that cancer was caused by, I don't know, Muslims, you know, the U.S. government would stamp it out tomorrow.
I mean, you know that that's true. If we could prove that lung cancer was caused by people from Syria, the U.S. government would have a plan to get rid of it, like, today. That's the only way that this administration will take care of anything. Can we tie it to Muslims somehow? No? Screw it. We're not going to get rid of it. So, you know, whatever. I haven't had health care for most of my life. I do have health care now, largely because I married well, as all people in radio eventually must. But, you know, by the same token, and by the way, let me just say this. For the people out there, give me the, well, you know, Rick, if you have health care, it's going to be, if you have national health care, it's going to be expensive and it's going to be inefficient and you're not going to get your choice of doctor and it's never going to work properly.
That's what's going on now with AIDS healthcare.
Sons of bitches. Let me just tell you, I made an appointment to get my shrink. They chose the doctor for me. This is health care that I'm paying for. This is actually my insurance company.
Yes.
I won't say the name of my insurance company, but I will say that I
barely knew her.
So you can put that together if you like. I'm just going
to
say this.
I'm trying to. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm just saying there's different kinds of, you know, there's different kinds of bread you can have a sandwich on. You could have an onion roll. You could have a breakfast roll. You could have a Kaiser roll. You could have a bagel.
You have Wonder Bread insurance?
Yes, it feels that way. Anyway,
I called the insurance company. I'm like, look, I'm going crazy. I need a shrink. Well, how do you feel about 7 weeks from now? And, man, I just fought tooth and nail. And all they would give me is 7 weeks. They picked the shrink for me. They gave me one that was in Clackamas at 4 o'clock, which makes it almost impossible to get to. And then they canceled it at the last. They canceled it that day. And now, the soonest they'll do it is another 6 weeks from now. It has now already, I haven't even gone to see the goddamn shrink. And it's taken me 13 weeks to go see a doctor that they picked for me. And that is with an actual commercial capitalist-based insurance company. So don't give me your load about how we have national health care. It's somehow going to be inefficient. I mean, it's just no one believes that.
No.
There is no right-thinking person on earth who believes that. So I don't see any point in seeing the Michael Moore film because it's just going to confirm all of my darkest feelings and suspicions about our state of non-healthcare in this country.
You'll end up at the Clackamas Cuckoo House anyway.
Seriously. You're all going to die anyway.
Well, I'm not going to play the second soundbite then.
No. Here's, there's lots of people who are going to see the movie and who care about it.
All right.
You should play it. Play it for the people, Tim, if not for me. Well, all right.
That's an immoral question in a humane society to ask that question. Where's the profit here? How's this going to affect our bottom line? How are we going to make money off this sick person? This doesn't look good, folks. I mean, it doesn't look good to the rest of the world, and it won't look good to the anthropologists who dig us up hundreds of years from now.
Now, if you tour that Omni Body World 3 thing, you're all going to die probably of something big and gristly inside one of your kidneys. So there's really no getting away from it. Rick, you should tell Tim that my husband and I refer to that place as excremento. Ha, ha, ha. You are funny.
Or a sack of tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, you don't want to have a terminal illness and then belong to Kaiser.
That's you who said that, sir.
Yes.
I did not identify the company in any way.
Yeah, well, I barely knew her, too, and now I'm dying. But anyway, that's a joke.
Is it, sir?
They've done the same thing to me.
Wait, is this Jeff who has the terminal illness?
Yeah.
Oh. Well.
Now I go to Providence. They're great. I love them. They're wonderful people.
Hasn't stopped the dying thing, though, has it?
No, but if you're going to be treated, at least you're not being treated with indifference.
That is true. Well, I'm glad your glass is half full today, sir.
Well, you know, it's either that or I've got to watch Katie Couric at night. I'd rather drink the Kool-Aid.
She gives you a reason to live.
Katie Couric gives you a reason to wake up in the morning, sir.
No, Katie Couric gives me a reason to turn the TV off.
That's you who said that. I'm a team player.
Yeah.
We support Katie Couric here. All right, stay in touch,
my friend.
Even
though it's on coin.
I'm sitting here waiting for my OxyContin to arrive.
Oh, God bless you, sir. Let me know how that feels.
It doesn't feel at all. It's wonderful.
God bless. I envy you, except for the dying part.
Oh, well, you know, we all got to die.
That is true. All right, thank you, Jeff.
Bye.
All right, there you go. Hey, we haven't heard from that guy for a while.
No, I was wondering why.
Jeff with the... Had you just assumed that nature had taken its course? That's kind Jeff, who I believe has some sort of some ailment. I think he described it as the cancer or the whatever. Cancer of the life.
I believe it's poison.
Yeah. Hi, you're on the... I don't think you die of that. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Hey. I've got a story for Sarah, an airline story.
Oh, wait, hold on.
No.
Sarah's flying out tonight. Perhaps for the last time. Give me just 1 second here, sir.
God in heaven, teach me how.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I used to live in Colorado, and when I flew from Colorado to California, we'd always have to fly over the Rocky Mountains, and the word turbulence is an understatement. There was one time where we dropped 500 feet in a matter of about 2 or 3 seconds as we were going over the mountains. So just hope that you are flying high enough as you're going from Oregon to Louisiana.
Here's the thing, or just hope that you're high enough that the crash...
Stop it.
It's just the impact that kills you.
You are mean.
You just don't want to burn.
That is mean.
Go ahead, sir. Oh, maybe he's dead.
Oh, you know, PDX has this... actually, they have some... You know, our airport is 1,000 times better than LAX.
No, that is really true.
Now they have a place for Wi-Fi, which has the most comfortable seating in the airport, and a big screen TV in that area.
You know, there are sections of LAX that look as though they haven't been redone since 1950, and they probably haven't been.
You've got three menu choices. You have Starbucks, Burger King, and a California pizza kitchen that doesn't have pizza.
And the other thing at LAX, people don't appreciate this about the PDX airport until you've gone to it somewhere else, is that, of course, there is that law here in Portland that you cannot charge more.
Right.
You know, and as much as I was talking about the free market system, you do sort of appreciate government price controls every now and again, because, you know, the things cost the same at the Portland airport as they do everywhere else. You go to the LAX airport, and how much will this hamburger and, you know, and soda be? That'll be $19, you know, and that's it, man. LAX is impossible to get around in. It's confusing. It's always under construction. It smells. That place, and it is, for a while, LAX was considered the second worst airport in the world in terms of deaths there. It trailed only the Hong Kong International Airport. It was the Hong Kong International Airport followed by LAX in terms of deaths. Where are you flying into?
I don't know. There's a layover. Oh, I'm
you're actually. You're landing in Narlands, right?
Yeah.
You're flying into the bayou.
Is it a water landing? They're going to fly right into a swamp?
Okay.
This is the Sam Cooke Memorial Airport.
The little book in back of the seat with the little plane that I was flying in said, just in case.
Just in case you're in a band, please read this. We're not landing on the... Heading now to the Otis Redding Memorial Runway.
Take a left at the feces.
Fantastic. Come on, you're not seeing the humor in it.
You're mean.
I just have this to say to you, sir. And that is, Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue, pretty, 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 pretty Peggy Sue.
I guess we're flying to Texas, and then we're flying to New Orleans.
Really?
To a garden party.
The sheets are red and moist.
I don't appreciate you today.
I know. Fantastic. You're listening to KCMD Portland. By the way, more from Tim Riley coming up today. We'll do a news-heavy day today.
Sure.
It's a heavy day. It's a chunky day here at the Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah. Let's see. What else coming up? Roop later on. Top five rock songs you can no longer take seriously. We got a sad snuff watch. We'll spin the topic wheel. And Fatboy yells at Sarah Reed, the movie Airplane. Ladies and gentlemen, from CNN Radio Center in Atlanta, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
How are you, Rick?
I am dandy, my friend. We're a little exercised about things today, but that's okay. It's a good day to be alive.
Well, it is, you know?
And every day above ground is a good day.
Oh, that's for sure.
Every day you are not dying in a horrific mid-air collision and then plummeting to your doom. Your final thoughts, a tangled frenzy of chaos and anarchy as you head towards the ground at 186,000 feet per second per second.
I can't even imagine that. You know, whenever they give those safety tips on the airplanes, you know, here's what's going to keep you alive.
Nothing's
and you can use your seat as a flotation device.
Yeah, because that's exactly what you want to do. As I think, I forget who noted this, but, you know, I don't want to spend the last remaining 20 hours of my life dying of thirst in the ocean while I cling to a mattress that smells like somebody's cellulite-ridden ass. You know what I mean? I'll pass. Thank you. I'll drown. Let the sharks take me. Sarah Dillon's going to be flying today, by the way. That's why we're talking about this.
That'll get somebody riled up in a hurry.
Sarah's going to be flying to New Orleans. Do you have anything that she should do? Any recommendations, sir?
Yeah, wear a bulletproof vest.
In your face.
Thanks,
Ed. I got people from a crime commission that want to call me back now.
They're dead. Okay. Hey, speaking of crime... I'm sorry. Speaking of the crime commission. Hey,
Sarah, I'm sorry, too. I know you're all excited about your trip.
That's okay.
That time has passed. Let's talk about this guy, Mike Nifong. He's this, the prosecutor that was running this whole debacle against these lacrosse guys, these Duke lacrosse guys. Are they going to run this guy out of town on a rail or what?
Well, he looks, the facial expressions that he has, I'm following this right now, this hearing, and he certainly looks as though he's been through the mill here. And, you know, it's quite apparent that he could very well lose his law license. You know, he might not be practicing law very much longer.
Excellent. That's great. And, I mean, is it who decides this? Is it like a judge or is it a team of other lawyers? Or?
Actually, yeah, this is the North Carolina State Bar Association now. They've charged him with a bunch of violations of professional conduct, all tied to this lacrosse case. So today they had a police detective on the stand here, and He testified that the district attorney never asked him to withhold evidence and didn't coach him before the grand jury appearance. So, you know, we're getting conflicting testimony here. And there is a chance that a couple of these players could also testify. We're waiting for that.
He really does seem like a guy who just ought to be gotten rid of in a sort of in an employment sense. He just seems like a guy that he will never again be able to conduct a case without this hanging over his head. It seems like his time is sort of passed.
Yeah, the DNA testing apparently was the one that really broke the straw there, because obviously nothing was matching. Mm-hmm. And that is something that they are saying now was withheld and really hurt these kids.
Well, it remains to be seen. We'll see what happens to it. But it does seem like a kind of a foregone conclusion that whatever legal authority he had to pursue these cases, or at least his moral authority, sort of seems to be gone. So we'll see how it unravels. All right, my friend, enjoy your Atlanta afternoon. We will talk to you very soon. Ed McCarthy. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Rick.
All right, there you go. There's Ed McCarthy. All right, let's see. This email says, we're a bulletproof vest. Rick, stop it. I have to fly over the Rockies soon out of Denver. Out of Denver. The Denver airport? They call that the Widowmaker.
The sheets are red and moist. Where I'm lying.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
He's such a jerk.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
It's Michael.
Hey.
Man, that's got to be pretty scary for her, you know. You're I hope the heck nothing never happens to her.
I can tell you're concerned by the giggle in your voice.
Well, hey, you know, you're going to feel pretty low if something happens.
Then I'll be able to, I'll be able to, the thing is, if something happens to Sarah,
I'll be able to have show material for her. I can be a snuff.
I can spin that sympathy into a 12 share. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
do it for Sarah.
On.
Listen for Sarah. Yeah.
Hey, we love her. You know that.
Yeah, you need to turn up your radio, sir.
Turn it up?
Turn it up. Turn it up as loud as it'll go.
No, it ain't going to work.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good one, Rick.
All right. Bye now. The best part is he was talking about, you know, well, what if she meets her demise? And then he couldn't quit laughing while he was talking about it. I'm sorry, Sarah.
You know that I have a real actual fear of this, and that's just mean to play on that.
I'm trying to help you.
You're not trying to help me. You're talking about scenarios where I'm going to crash and die.
Well, yeah. Okay. How about the...
You know what? I'm starting to rethink this New Orleans thing. Everything I'm hearing about it is just totally negative.
I'm trying to find... I had a bunch of flight emails. Oh, wait. How about this one? Rick, I was flying back from Hawaii a year ago and one of the engines failed. We dropped a few thousand feet in 3 seconds. The flight attendants came by and took back our delicious meals, and we had to do the seats up, trays up routine as they buckled themselves in. An announcement came on stating that we were turning around and heading back to the islands. I was sitting up front, and I swear to God, I heard one of the attendants say to another one of the attendants, quote, "We're turning around because we may have to do a water landing, and the water's warmer there, and there's less chance of sharks." Fun stuff. Have fun, Sarah, says Dan. Dan. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Would you like to hear another one?
No.
My brother was on an airplane in San Francisco heading down the runway when the pilot slammed the yoke back, which pulled the nose up and forced the plane to slide on its tail. Screeching down the runway, everybody was ghost-white and a few were crying, and the woman next to him literally peed her pants in fear. He said while the plane shuddered and made incredibly horrid scraping noises, he could hear people praying out loud to their God for a quick death. The plane finally took off, though. And
why are you reading this? Stop.
I'm just saying...
Stop reading. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. We're breaking. I hate you.
I only got one paragraph left. You haven't even heard the twist. The punchline to this. Do you want to know why this was happening to the plane?
No.
You sure?
Yes.
It has to do with an earthquake. Yeah, fine. Never mind. Spoil my fun.
It's 503. I'm sorry to ruin it for you, Rick.
It's okay. I'll forgive you. 503-733-2970. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. Don't go anywhere. our program. By the way, I finished watching the worst movie ever last night. It's so bad, my wife and I have been watching it in 20-minute increments. We couldn't even bring ourselves to watch it all the way through. Because I realized, even though I owned it, and even though everybody in my generation and below, that is to say, everybody, let's say, 35 years of age and younger, name checks this movie constantly.
Did you watch Reality Bites?
No, of course I've seen that.
Oh, I thought it was a movie you'd already seen.
No.
We were talking about that yesterday.
No, it's a movie I'd never seen. No, well, we might as well have a little bit of discussion here. Then we'll go to the news later on. We got the top five coming up. Top five rock songs you can never take seriously again. Fatboy Roberts will come in and yell at Sarah about never having seen Airplane. What else? Well, some other things. We got a sad snuff watch coming up. Don't forget, on Saturday, Scotty and I will be judging Portland Teen Idol. Yeah, some chick's going to be singing Ladylike, the Storm Large song. They sent me the list in advance of what... I'm so old because I don't know half the songs. It's a lot of, like, Beyonce crap and, you know, stuff like I wouldn't even know. Singing Such and Such by Pink, like some song I would never know. What was I saying? So, no, Sarah and I were talking yesterday about the... I don't know how we got onto this subject. Oh, because we've been trying to... It's one of those things that we... A tradition we wanted to start, and it lasted a day and a half, and then we stopped. Where we wanted to begin every day's show with a speech from a movie, which all started with that goddamn Independence Day speech. And so, in an effort to stem the rising tide of Bill Pullman occurrences on this program, I said, well, we got to start each day with a different speech from a different movie. And we did that, we did Ed Wood, then we did The Goonies, and that, like, never happened again. And Sarah's like, what about that speech from Reality Bites? And here's the thing, I don't even really remember what speech you're talking about, because I've tried to flush that movie out of my brain.
It's the horrible graduation speech that she gives.
See, but I don't remember anything that she says at her graduation speech. Winona Ryder, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember anything that she says. I remember all kinds of bad things about that film, but I don't remember her graduation speech. Can you quote to me now some of it, or summarize any of it so I might remember?
No, I remember that you know, they're all like kitschy and they make a music, you know, some kind of music video out of the speech. I remember she ends with "the answer is," and then she blanks out.
It can't hold a candle to Ione
really,
Skye's graduation
really,
speech.
Really bad.
Reality Bites is a terrible film. It's awful. It's awful. It's awful. It sucks. And you know what? And I
love to see with her and Ben Stiller and "Ooh, Baby, I Love Your Way." That's
I am
so bad.
Let me just say this, by the way.
I am the writer now. Speaking at graduations,
she's available for graduations, bar mitzvahs, ribbon cuttings. And I know that Tim feels a little excluded from this because you're probably a big Reality Bites fan.
Not
really, but no one is. That's the thing. And here's why I hate Reality Bites so much. And I'm proud to say, by the way, that like so many bad things from the 90s, I hated them then. I didn't wait till now to start hating them. I hated them at the time. I hated grunge at the time. I hated Reality Bites at the time. I hated much of the fashion at the time. I hated many of the movies at the time. So I didn't wait until just now to start hating Ethan Hawke and Reality Bites. I've softened my stance on Ethan Hawke a little bit. Ethan Hawke, I have softened my stance on largely because of Before Sunset and Before Sunrise, which are fantastic, nearly perfect films. Reality Bites, however, is doggerel. It's absolute crap. And the worst thing about Reality Bites is that movie, future generations will use that to summarize my generation. Like Generation Z, or maybe we'll start over again at the beginning, Generation F, whatever it is. 30 years from now, going to be a bunch of snot-nosed little bastards watching Reality Bites and believing that that is an accurate representation of my generation. I feel like leaving, when I die, I feel like dying clutching a stone tablet upon which I have written, Reality Bites does not represent me or my generation, please to note. And then just so like archaeologists in the future won't look at that and go, and they were all really into like ironic 70s referencing and they danced around in convenience stores to the Knack. Anyway. And they loved bad Peter Frampton remakes and Ben Stiller. None of these things are true. Reality Bites is a terrible film. You know what Reality Bites is, Tim? I can put this in your terms.
Yes.
Reality Bites is my generation's Easy Rider.
That's even before me.
Well, what is your generation's Easy Rider? Okay, let me ask you this, Tim. What is a film that you feel your generation is probably unrealistically or unfairly represented by, if you have one? Because I think the baby boomers, a lot of people from that era, feel unfairly represented by Easy Rider. My dad, for example, always hated Easy Rider because my dad is of that era, but my dad wasn't a hippie. He was, I got problems with my dad, obviously, but for all of my dad's many, 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 nearly innumerable flaws, he was not a hippie. So I'll give him that at least. And so he always hated Easy Rider because he hated the fact that his generation was defined by that movie. And he was just like, F that. He's like, my life wasn't anything like that. So is there a movie that you feel is used to summarize your generation?
Dazed and Confused.
Okay, I hadn't thought about that because a recent film, but a film set in the 70s. So you feel like Dazed and Confused represents your generation in a way that is not realistic, or at least doesn't speak to your experience.
Yes.
All right. So that's how it is with Reality Bites. Reality Bites, I remember at the time watching Reality Bites, and again, this is not a thing of where I was, this is like my hatred of Nirvana. People think that it was because I was too old, but I was exactly in the demo, I was still a teenager. And I remember being a teenager watching Reality Bites and thinking, well, F this is retarded. I'm not like this, no one I know is like this. This is some MTV marketing guy's idea of what my generation is like. But in the future, they won't know any better, and so they'll watch Reality Bites and go, it was exactly like this. They loved irony, these kids. So it was just stupid. Anyway, so that is a long, long, long-ass way of getting to this. So there's a movie that is constantly referenced. I almost don't even want to say what it is now. It's a movie whose title has become a cultural icon. But that, except a few fleeting scenes notwithstanding, I had never watched from beginning to end. It's a movie so bad, my wife and I had to watch it in 20-minute increments over like 3 or 4 days. I owned it. I bought it on a whim a long time ago because it was on sale for like $1, and I'm like, I gotta own it. I bought it, realized I'd never watched it. Watched it in 20-minute increments over the last 4 or 5 days. I almost don't even want to say what it is now. I almost want to play a scene from it. Oh, I wish I brought it. Let me look it up. Let me see if I can find a scene from it online. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he's your president, your prophet, your seer, your revelator. He's the goddamn Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, now the Portland Catholic Archdiocese is upset. Like they have any credibility whatsoever.
Is this a clergy watch?
Not really.
Okay.
Well, this has to do with that raid that arrested all those illegal aliens yesterday.
Oh, wait, you're telling me the Catholic Church is upset about that? Because they're the law and order church.
Yeah, they're the law and order church. And they're for family values.
Jesus Christ.
So that's that. So who cares what the Catholic Church thinks?
Well, were any of the people arrested and deported young and nubile? Because that's the only way the Catholic Church would get upset about it. You know, I shouldn't be so crass. I shouldn't be so crass.
No, but you're being truthful.
The Catholic Church is not just interested in molesting small children. They do have other interests, such as...
They like preteens.
Swindling the poor out of their money. I don't know, extorting 10% of the income out of people who maybe are not fluent in the English language and who are, who are especially vulnerable to a church that preys on their insecurities and fears. So, yeah, they are interested in things aside from child diddling. Also theft, for example.
So we should be very considerate that the Catholic Church is upset.
Yes,
I'm sure we are.
You know, I'm so glad the Catholic Church is going to be gone soon. I'll be happy.
They're turning some of them into condos.
Oh, no, it's true. And again,
the church that I went through all my Catholic things for has been turned into condominiums.
And I don't want anybody to think that this is just some broad-brush anti-religion screed. We do enough of those in this program. I'm singling out the Catholic faith for this now. Mm-hmm. As a Catholic, I'm allowed to say these things. You will not make me happier than when the Catholic Church has to start selling off its holdings and is no longer allowed to use their vast international political and economic clout to terrify people out of huge sections of their income and to win favors from the government and to operate tax-free. I will be glad when I see most of the Catholic churches up and down the coast of this country turned into waffle houses.
Oh, that does sound good.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
What do people in Lake Oswego up to, you ask? Well, the police there arrested a 31-year-old man after he was reportedly drinking a beer and driving a golf cart down First Street. Officers were dispatched and quickly redirected after police received several callers reporting a man driving a golf cart south of McBee Street while drinking a beer. They caught up with the man at Lake Oswego Terrace Condominiums on Pacific Highway. James Matthew Larkin is charged with driving under the influence of intoxicants, and they took him to Clackamas County Jail. He is charged with operating the cart without permission. The condo managers did not press charges. The city of Seattle is about to ban microwave popcorn.
What?
The city of Seattle is about to ban microwave popcorn.
That was a rhetorical what, but okay.
A memo from the Fleets and Facilities Department addressed to employees at Civic Center building says there have been several evacuations in recent years due to smoke alarms being tripped by burning popcorn. And among all the states that within the past 3 years, there have been 8 evacuations of the Justice Center, including the jail cells and the courtrooms, all because of microwave popcorn.
I love that the implication is that the people are too goddamn stupid to just learn how to microwave it correctly. That's out of the question, to read the instructions and to behave accordingly.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because the memo also gives employees tips on how to prevent the problem, such as following the instructions and staying by the microwave to know when the popcorn is done.
I like the idea that following the instructions is a tip. Just a suggestion. All right. Oh, let's see if I've got... Sarah's my computer up here. Let's see if I... All right. Okay. I think I'll have a little bit of audio to play here in a minute. All
right. Well, that sounds delightful.
Go ahead, Tim.
What's Joe Lieberman up to? Well, he is sticking by his guns. He demands that we have to attack Iran.
When somebody says terrible, violent, anti-American, inhumane things like Hitler did and like bin Laden did.
Of course, Hitler.
In the 90s, you got to take it seriously.
Who said that? I guess he did.
I guess.
The best way to deal with Iran is through strength. Unity through strength.
Iran essentially has initiated aggressive action, military action against us through proxies, and we're not going to stop them unless they take us seriously and believe that we will use our own military power.
England prevails.
Former Senator and Law and Order actor Fred Thompson made an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Lenneman. Thompson admits, yes, he does want to be president.
Would you like the job of President of the United States?
I've never craved the job of president, but I want to do some things that only a president can do. So the answer is yes.
All right. Here's why that guy can never be elected, because I don't want another 4 years. You're going to just hear it in that answer, just in like a 12-word response. It's a bunch of the boring, turning back, snake-eating-its-tail, political, double-talking gibberish, and it's totally uninteresting. There's no comedy value there.
Well, let's go now with Nebraska's man in space. Nebraska's first astronaut is in awe of his surroundings. He says it doesn't look anything like the Midwest up there.
Just looking out the window at the station when the sun shines off the arrays and seeing all the vistas that we can see, it's just incredible for me.
He says there's a lack of gravity as compared to being in Nebraska.
I've adapted reasonably well. I was kind of surprised at how easily it came to me when I got into orbit, but I have no reference to compare it to. I've done the what used to be the KC-135 a few times, but that period of weightlessness isn't long enough to really give you a taste like it is here.
Hicks in space.
All right.
Barbara Walters is being honored by the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She will receive a 2,340th star on the fame stretch tomorrow. On The View today, this is the first time it's been mentioned since Rosie left. Walters, so I guess this is to create attention again. She joked along with Ryan Seacrest and former pop trio Destiny's Child.
Ryan Seacrest and Destiny's Child are young and hot, and that's where I belong.
Okay, you're creepy.
That's the post-Rosie world.
Yeah, all right. You know, Ed Wood's got a star in the Hall of Fame. Have you seen his the Ed Wood star?
No, I haven't.
I wonder where it's at. I didn't get to see it the last time I was there. I want to see
Ed
Wood.
There. I drove by.
I was watching Ed Wood. We were talking about it yesterday, and so I went home and watched it again. Yeah. Watching Ed Wood on my new Zen Vision M, and which is, man, it's just the best movie. That movie is so great. Just, it's pitch perfect. Every single frame. I'm going to bring it in on DVD so you can watch it, Sarah. Every single frame. And, you know, here's the thing. You'll watch it, and you will fall in love with it.
I know. I know that I will. I mean, it's one of those movies I've looked at, and I know that I will love it.
That's the thing, is I don't have any... And it's not like I'll shun you or something if you don't, but I know that you will watch it, and it's just... It is... I know I'm going on about a movie that's like a decade and a half old, but it is just... It's so perfect. It's so wonderful. Oh, here we go. Rick. Early baby boomers are defined by Easy Rider and The Big Chill. That's another one. Late boomers are defined by Dazed and Confused, as Tim said. Generation X defined by Reality Bites and... Sarah? About the same
Singles?
Era? Singles, exactly. And then he says, I despise both Reality Bites and Singles. They can die in a fire.
I love Singles. There's nothing wrong with Singles.
Singles is a great movie if you ignore the presence of Kira Sedgwick. If you can mentally, if you can mentally Photoshop in some different actress in the Singles, are there any bad moments in Singles? I mean, she sucks. She's terrible.
Of course, we've talked about this before.
Not the outtakes.
No, the scene with Janet and Dr. Jameson.
No, it's okay. I don't mind that.
I hate that when he's like, you know, I have a good feeling about you, Janet. It's like, oh, thanks, I have a boyfriend. I hate that scene.
You know, the only thing that, and Joni pointed this out to me once, and now, as a result, it bothers me whenever I watch Singles.
It really, the one completely, did you ever watch, here's an interesting phrase. I was thinking about this last night when I was watching, or on Sunday when I was watching the Sopranos. Did you ever do this when you're, and I think it's a phrase that has only recently come to the fore in our culture, when you're watching TV or a movie and something happens and you do something that we've started doing in this country, which is to call BS on something. I don't think our parents did that. I don't think our parents said, I call BS on that. But that's a thing that we've now started doing, going, I call BS. And what that means is, this behavior currently being engaged in on the screen is unrealistic and would probably not happen in a similar setting in a true life world. What that means, they are engaging in behavior that you do not believe those characters would in reality have been engaged in. I call BS on something in Singles, and Joni pointed it out, and I believe it's right. I don't think that Campbell Scott and Kira Sedgwick would be at that Soundgarden show at that club, or the Alice in Chains show at the beginning, where they show the sequence of, like, the woman's bracelets being...
Well, they'll always go out
dancing. Yeah, where the bracelets are being parted and the stamp is being put on. It's a great shot.
That is my favorite part every time. That's why I wear so many bracelets, because I love it when people push the bracelets aside.
It's a great shot where they part the bracelets and they stamp the inside of her wrist.
But it's a rush.
But you take a good long look at Kira Sedgwick, I don't believe she'd be at that Alice in Chains show. I totally...
Well, and the weird thing is, if they go to the show, they don't go to see the show. They go to go dancing.
Which is no one... Yeah, I'm going to go dance at the Alice in Chains concert.
No.
I'm going to go dance at that Rammstein concert. Concert later. Here's Tim Riley.
I'm confused. Jake Gyllenhaal will soon be adding to his acting resume, so he'll have to redo it. People magazine reports the 26-year-old is considering an opportunity to star on Broadway in the new political stage drama Farragut North. The show's producer tells the magazine he expects Gyllenhaal's decision by the end of the week. If he takes the job, the actor will play an idealistic communications director for an out-of-the-box presidential candidate. That to be based on the 2004 Democratic candidate Howard Dean.
I will totally see this. I'll see it now. I'd pay to see it today. I don't even care if it's not finished. I'll watch it right now. That's you just described every movie. I love those movies. I love political movies. I love movies about politics, movies about campaigns. Especially ones that are thinly veiled, that are Romana Clays, as they say. Thinly veiled representations about whatever. I'm all over that. I'm absolutely all over that. All right. God bless him. Let's see. What do we got here? This is, this email says, Rick, the number one reason Reality Bites sucks is this. Sitting on a BMW with empty Big Gulp cups. They didn't even care enough about the film to spend 99 cents to give the scene some damn reality. And Ethan Hawke singing. And he just sends it, puke, puke, puke. Thanks, Matt. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
And because Rosie O'Donnell is now gone, Barbara Walters gets to deliver her second soundbite of the day.
That is the number one tourist attraction in Los Angeles, I guess. And my big decision is, do I kneel down and then somebody has to do this?
What?
That is the number one tourist attraction in Los Angeles, I guess. And my big decision is, do I kneel down and then somebody has to do this?
I didn't make it any clear. What is she talking about?
Getting her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
But why is she kneeling down? What is she talking about?
I don't know. Like Rosie's soundbites are pretty much self-explanatory.
Seriously. All right, let's get these calls. We'll do the top five here in just a second. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, I was going to say, boy, I really hope you didn't buy the Big Chill, because
The Big Chill.
The annoying thing for me about the Big Chill is, you know, back in the day before there was internet and such, when you'd get the TV guide and, hey, 17 cassette tapes for a dollar, you know, sign me up. and you get the catalog back, and it was like every single page was features on music for the Big Chill generation, and I didn't know what that was.
No, it's true.
I care. But, I think defining movies for, I don't know, my generation.
How old are you, sir?
I am 36.
Okay.
I would have to say most John Hughes films, including The Breakfast Club, Steelers Day Off.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
John Cusack movies, Left Dead, High Fidelity.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, the New Jersey trilogy and such.
Yeah, Clerks is a defining... That is probably true. Clerks is probably... Clerks, Chasing Amy, Mallrats. I would say especially Clerks and Chasing Amy are definitive movies for my generation. Not that other generations won't identify with them and love them, but as a product of, you know, and about, you know, basically they're about kids who were born in the 70s. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree. And I would not call BS on that. I would say for a certain slice of my generation, those movies are very true to life.
You know, which brings me to the, you know, Sarah's flying.
Yeah. Wait, hold on.
Get into the whole thing, but...
Oh, I can't. It doesn't want to play.
You know, my cousin Walter was on an airplane once. In the right spot.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Well done. That is a 1% joke right there. Well done.
Cousin Walter jokes.
That's the backbone of this program, Tim. I was going to alley-oop that, but I don't even know. There's no more obscure reference I could make
there
to top
no
that
more
one.
Oops left in those alleys.
I got nothing. It's like my humor being as empty. I give no more jokes. Where did they go?
Well, let's talk about a rascally squirrel, shall we?
Let's do that, and then we'll take this email and we'll go to the top five.
We'll do that.
Fire
officials are blaming a squirrel for an electrical outlet at a Portland mall.
I swear to God, I thought you were making this story up earlier as a cliched example of what kind of story we would never do.
Well, and apparently, Lloyd Center Mall was plunged into darkness by some rascally squirrel. And this happened at 700 Northeast Multnomah, about 4:40 yesterday afternoon when all the kids were getting out of school to cause trouble down there. A crew said the squirrel was in the substation and caused the outage. We don't know if he lived.
Good night, San Diego. Go F yourself.
All right. You keep it classy, Gresham.
All right. Let's see. This is a pretty interesting email I just got, but I'm going to set it aside because it doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about. I just got an email from a guy that's really interesting, but so much so that I think I might wait because it's going to spawn a whole series of conversations. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, hi. This is John. The thing I wanted to chip in about was the Catholic Church, and have you ever noticed, no matter what part of the world you're in, except for the Orient, of course, Every time you look at the high ground, you go to Portland, you look at every piece of high ground, the Catholics have got something there first. They get to every place, they always send the missionaries, the first thing they do...
Get a mountain.
Whatever city you go to, you look at all the high points, turn 360 degrees, boom, there's some sort of Catholic, either a church, a statuary, and it's just...
It's true.
They were talking about them selling off, the real estate.
They're crafty that way.
Except for L.A., they have the Hollywood sign.
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. No,
that's you're the only one.
Thank God. Thank God something's still left.
Yes.
Anyway, love the show. Good luck, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you,
for
sir.
The flight. Good luck.
All right, appreciate it. All right. So here's let me just play this. Here's a clip. Now, I have not pre-screened this, but I know it can't possibly be profane. Tempting fate. I don't know if this will give it away or not, but here's a little clip of this movie, the worst movie ever. It's not really the worst movie ever, but goddamn it, it's pretty bad. That Laura and I have been watching in 20-minute segments. We just finished this last night, and we watched it because it's a cultural icon. It really is. Let's see if I can... Hold on, see if we can... Oh, is this a kooky thing where they've added... All right, no, I got
it. Is this music over a clip?
Yeah, they've done... Okay, let me try this one. Because they've done an ironic juxtaposition of music over the clip. Let me try this one instead. I almost just want to play this and see if anybody spots it. Does anybody know what it is? Anyone? Of course not.
Is it St. Elmo's Fire?
No. What? No.
I don't know. I have no idea. This is the worst song ever.
Okay, all of us just now.
Don't ever do that again.
All three of us at once just started moving our shoulders all funky 80s Madonna style. Like a Lucky Star Madonna. All of us just now were doing the Lucky Star Madonna.
It was like we were almost on a moving commercial.
Tim did it too.
Oh, yes. No, we'd be wiggling our behinds, wouldn't we?
Yes. And we'd all be blonde. Be thrusting our buttocks excitedly. All of us just now, we're doing that simultaneously. All right, let me see if I can just... Music plays once more, and the faith down deep inside comes down through. This is so badly wants to be What a Feeling
by Irene Cara. Listen to how they lead up to the hook.
Splash Dance?
No.
Oh, damn.
Listen to how they lead up to the hook and how you, in your head, mentally insert the, what a feeling, instead of what she goes into. You can hear them leading to that. This was obviously meant to sound like, what a feeling. What I want to do. Then I step out on the floor. Here's the, this is the bridge, or the pre-chorus. Once more. See, that's clearly supposed to be what
that's,
I feel.
That's plagiarism.
Isn't that the worst song you've ever heard? It's a terrible film. And I know that Sarah has, to describe your look as blank is an understatement at this point. And it's to be,
yeah, I have no idea what that is.
It's fair, and I'm not knocking. You could not, I would be astounded if you were able to spot the song or the movie based on the song. It really would have stunned me. So we'll see if anybody can get it. I don't think we have anything. Scotty, do we have anything to give away? Do we have anything to give to well, we'll find something. We have some crap. You'll win something. I don't know what the hell it is. You'll win some crap from us. Oh, by the way, don't forget, go to 970.am and sign up to be a Glorious Bastard. This week, we're giving away another pair of OMSI Body Worlds 3 tickets to the Glorious Bastard of the Week. So that's coming up. You got to go to 970.am, sign up. All right. Well, you know, if anybody calls up and is able to nail the movie based on this song, we'll, I don't know, give you some crap. All right. Let's see. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to close the window here to play the top five. But let me save the URL so I can bring it back. What? You're kidding me. No one has. Does somebody have it?
Who has what?
Oh, no. They hung up. All right. Let's, ladies and gentlemen, let's roll your top five for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio
five,
program.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is marvelous. Counting is the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Here's a top five that occurred to me today, and I called it the top five rock songs you can no longer take seriously. I will say in advance, there is one non-rock song on this list, just because it was such an obvious choice. It just had to be on here, because no one can listen to it and take it seriously ever, ever, ever again. So there's one non-rock song on this list. I have no real reason for doing this top five, but as I was sitting in my truck spewing noxious carbon monoxide into the air, sitting in traffic this morning, not helping the retarded, it just sort of came to me, as though I was Saul on the road to Damascus, and I was blinded by the light of this top five. And so these are the top five rock songs it is now impossible, or at least difficult, to listen to seriously. Tim Riley.
With honorable mention, we have Led Zeppelin with Stairway to Heaven.
Ray Gunn. Here's the thing about this song. The reason honorable mention is, it's only really true for these opening few chords. Let me go back to this. These opening few notes, and that's largely due to Wayne's World. You know, no Stairway. Like all anthems, because the rock anthem, do rock anthems exist anymore?
No.
I don't think they do.
They've gone the way of Burma Shoon songs.
They've gone the way of 20 Mule Team Borax.
Men on the Moon and whatnot.
Laser heart surgery. Medical hair restoration. What was I saying? Because I think the end of progressive rock radio, the rise of the single, the rise of iTunes, these sorts of things. I think that now we, and of course it was largely the clear channelization of radio that made everything 3 minutes long. What is the last rock anthem you can think of? And when I say anthem, I don't just mean like a really popular song. Like, you can argue that some of those My Chemical Romance songs are anthems, but I'm talking about a big 9-minute rock and roll anthem.
Like Working for the Weekend?
Not
Friday afternoon.
Not like Working for the Weekend. The last big long rock anthem I can think of, and maybe Sarah, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, is November Rain. That's the last long ass rock anthem I can think of.
Yeah.
They played it, they didn't edit it, they played it all the way through. And even like the kids today, you play November Rain, the kids, they like that. And the, you know, it's just, I can't think of a rock anthem since then You could argue that maybe some of those Green Day songs off American Idiot, because they're like nine songs strung together, and so they're, you know, they're all like 10 minutes long. But
yes.
But this, like so many rock anthems, like Free Bird, or like you know, whatever, Dream On, or any of those songs. You know, they're cheesy until you actually sit and listen to them, and then you realize, you know, what great songs they are. They're really pretty irrefutably great as rock songs. But Wayne's World did really ruin at least the first 30 seconds of the song for a lot of people. Great song, though. What I would advise you to do is what I did after I quit being a rock DJ, because it was a living hell on earth. I was a huge Zeppelin fan growing up, as you know, and then working in radio, you lose the, it's like being a wine taster. You go home and you just want to drink nothing but, like, Ovaltine. Working in rock radio, I didn't want to hear Led Zeppelin ever again. So I didn't listen to Zeppelin or to rock music for pleasure for like a year and a half. So I would encourage you to take about a year and not listen to Stairway to Heaven ever. Don't listen to it at all. And then go back and listen to it again. You'll find it's a pleasing and pleasant rock composition. Not so much now. Now you're sick to death of it and you probably hate it. Like Hotel California, that's another one. My friend Charlie has this theory that you can't go a day without hearing Hotel California. Every single day you hear it somewhere.
I have it in my head, driving my little car down PCH through Malibu.
That's what I'm saying. Or you see it on a commercial, it's on the intercom at Safeway, it's in a car that drives by you. Yeah.
I was probably true at one point, but I don't think so anymore.
It was on Entourage. I watched Entourage on Sunday and they were playing Hotel California. Maybe not as much now, but goddamn, there was a time when Hotel California was played somewhere in your life everywhere.
I was in Poland and that was the only thing in English being played on the radio.
It's insane. Yeah, I would like to think that some of those songs will die out eventually, but what are you going to do? These are the top five rock songs it's difficult to take seriously.
Number five, The Deep Purples and Smoke on Water.
Largely because of Beavis and Butthead.
I've already heard this enough.
Well, what else do you need to hear, right? This is it. The last good use of this song was in School of Rock. When they do that thing, we've all seen School of Rock, probably, maybe not, but it was School of Rock was a genius film, much as I hate children, and I do. That's a great film, where he has that sequence where he takes a bunch of kids who've never heard rock music, and he has them build this song from the ground up in the classroom, one instrument at a time. That's pretty genius. There was a time, I wish I could love this song. There must have been a time when this was just a monster song. There must have been a time when you heard this.
Heavy rotation.
And you went, oh my God, what is this? What is this new piece of rock and roll creation? Good Lord! I must call everyone I know! Now, not so much. All right, we're done.
Have you stopped?
It can't be stopped.
Now's the time to start your 401k plan.
All right, it just... Okay, please. This really, I'm silly. The rock can't be. I'm not even touching it. The rock can't be stopped.
Bring on the rock.
These are the top. These are the top five rock songs it's impossible to take seriously.
Number four, Survivor with Eye of the Tiger.
This is a great, great, great rock song. And if you are a new listener, you know that I mean that sincerely. We don't traffic in a lot of. We don't truck with irony, as my grandmother would say. Little bit. We use irony like we use like cayenne pepper. A little bit goes a long way here. This is a great song, but when have you ever heard this played seriously by anybody? Never. Not since Rocky III. Let's just hear that beginning again. These songs all have the Edge of 17. This is totally stolen from Edge of 17. I never thought about that.
It's Sports Night USA.
Can't you just picture yourself in the middle of a WWE, like, SummerSlam pay-per-view? This used to be Hulk Hogan's entrance music. And he would come into the ring, Hulkamania, running wild! And, you know, Mean Gene Okerlund would be there, just, you know, and Gorilla Monsoon would be there talking about Hulk Hogan as he entered the ring. It's a great song, it really is. So hard to take seriously now. It's just been so bastardized. They don't take care of songs like they used to. And I know that makes me sound old.
You know, they probably used to sell paper towels. Now.
That's what I mean. I mean, there was a time...
Bring up those stubborn things.
In the 50s and 60s, songs got hoarded out. And then in the 70s, they took better care of songs. And then in the 80s, they started going back to the dogs again. This is a great song. Anybody who doesn't like the thing, the song is great, can just stuff it. Because this is it really is wonderful.
Don't forget that Del Monte plant.
It's true. It really is true.
know.
Eye of the tiger.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. Man, you know, when these guys wrote this, they must have just looked around and just... They must have just been like swimming pools for everyone. I mean, when they came up with that...
It's radio friendly.
Oh, when they came up with that dun, 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 they must have just been looking like, that's it. We are all getting laid forever. I mean, that is so great. You know, and just at the risk of just going on and on about it, I'm just going to play this one more time, point this out. This little, because it's not a riff as such. It's chords.
Kind of a rap.
Guitar players will know what I'm talking about, too. It's not, they're just chords. They're not playing individual notes. It's not like the Walk This Way riff. They're just, it's just a chord progression. And a new, interesting, catchy chord progression is really hard to come up with these days. When they came up with that, they must have just been like, that's it, we're gold. We're employed for the rest of our lives. All right. Top five songs it's hard to take seriously.
Number three, James Brown, I've Got You.
This is not a rock song, but I had to put it on here. I suppose there was a time when this song didn't suck.
I mean, this could be used for anything, like someone's tires, a vacuum cleaner, suppositories.
Does rectal itching make your day difficult? Wait, this would be the guy, this is the sound of the guy with the painful rectal itching. This would be him, like, leaning over to pick up a pencil. But see, then he feels good about his rectal itching because he's used a suppository or one of those tux bandages.
Martha Ray recommends.
Why are you talking about rectal itching?
Tim brought it up.
I knew that I wouldn't.
Jimmy broke the lamp. No, Tim talked about suppositories.
I got you. Oh, I've been.
Oh, okay, we're done. I don't want to hear that ever again.
No.
Let's have a rule from now on. We're never playing that song again.
Never
again. Top five songs it's difficult to take seriously. Number two,
George Thorogood, Bad to the Bone.
Again. He didn't create this chord progression. It was stolen from a million blues guys before him, but... God, I remember hearing that song as a kid and being like, that's the baddest ass song that's ever existed.
Yeah.
Really?
It's time for Night Talk with Barry Champlain. Yeah, well, I mean, see, you don't know. You've only ever known it as a cliche. Because when I, you know, I'm some idiot white kid from Kennewick. I mean, it's not like I grew up with a deep appreciation of the blues or something. I didn't grow up, I didn't know about Muddy Waters as a kid or Robert Johnson or Howlin' Wolf, Skip James, any of those guys. It's not like I'm some blues expert now, but I mean, growing up, I had never heard any of the source material that George Thorogood stole his whole act from. And don't get me wrong, I like George Thorogood, I really do. But I never heard Bo Diddley or anything. As far as I knew, George Thorogood created this kind of song. Yes, it's this interesting one for, you know, it's this cool chord progression, and it goes da-na-na-na-na, and he's talking about how his hard scramble life. I thought George Thorogood, white man, invented this style of music. Just like there was a whole generation of people that thought Vanilla Ice invented rap. I mean, you know. That's people thought Pat Boone invented rock and roll. People thought Stevie Ray Vaughan was a fantastic guitarist. I love that Tutti Frutti song that Mr. Boone sings. You know when Pat Boone sang Ain't That a Shame by Fats Domino, he changed it to Isn't That a Shame because he didn't want to sing rock and roll songs that were grammatically incorrect.
That makes sense for that period.
F him. F him. Right in the ear.
I liked him better in his metal career.
A huge dildo. What?
I liked him better during his metal career.
When he was in a metal mood.
I make a rich woman beg.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, this braggadocio sounded a lot more convincing when I was a kid. By the way, you're listening to KCMD Portland. We'll talk to Jim Rooker in a few minutes. All right, we're counting down the top five rock songs it is no longer possible to take seriously. And there's no debate about what number one is.
And the number one is Europe with the final countdown.
Thank you, Joe Bluth.
I can just see somebody lying on the park bench.
Totally. Our comeback video that Joni made.
All I think is Arrested Development now.
Where there was a yacht, now there is not. Somebody told me the other day I was doing my Joe Booth line incorrectly. I gotta step on the vocal here. Wait, hold on. Right here with us. I
was, so I have to augment my Joe Bluth line. I was doing it wrong. The actual line is illusions, Michael. A trick is something a whore does for money or cocaine. There we go. I had forgotten the or cocaine part. We just gotta rock it through to the chorus here. Bad because they must have made so much damn money on this song, licensing it to Fox and the DVD. The sync licenses aren't cheap, my friend. Oh. These guys are all Swedish, I think. One more chorus, and we'll talk to Roop. We got more calls. Tim Riley coming back with more news. A sad snuff watch on the way. That's another riff, man. That riff will enable these guys to tour forever and ever. All right, 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show for the City of Angels. Hello, sir. What's up, brother man? How's life in Los Angeles?
Hey, it's hot, man. It's like 90 degrees.
Are you trying to breathe? Are you trying to breathe shallowly, not shower very often, and quit dumping garbage in your toilets?
That's exactly. I've been doing all three of those things.
God bless you, sir. All right. Hey, I hate that. I know that you hate Paris Hilton and you hate talking about Paris Hilton and you hate the media making a mountain out of this thing. But because I have to pander to the lowest common denominator, because I am the lowest common denominator, who am I fooling? I cannot. Look, I think it's a retarded story, too, but I also can't quit talking about it because I'm a simple man with simple tastes. Is it true that her parents are getting a cut ahead of everybody else in line to visit her?
Yeah, everybody who's visited her from her family so far has gotten to cut in line. Now, that's another part of that whole preferential treatment thing that everybody's bitching and moaning about. But, you know, by the same token, this happened at lunchtime yesterday, and usually SOP with the sheriff's department or any celebrity in jail is they usually clear the place out at lunchtime because lunchtime is when the least amount of people are coming to visit somebody in jail, and then where the lunchroom is pretty much empty, so they clear it out completely so that they can visit. The only problem with that is, on this particular day, there were people waiting hours and hours to visit their loved ones in jail, and, you know, they were told, you have to come back after lunch, and that kicked everybody off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just one of those, it's just another one of those things. And so Lee Baca, isn't he getting yanked in front of some committee or some panel or something? They're going to...
He's getting yanked from all sides, man. And none of the yanking is pleasant.
Yeah, they...
He has to, within a week, come up with a report to the County Board of Supervisors. And, you know, the Board of Supervisors, they're the ones that hold the purse strings for the Sheriff's Department.
Right.
He has to explain to them or justify to them why he reassigned Paris Hilton last week to house arrest after the judge said she has to serve her sentence in jail. And because of medical confidentiality laws and all that, he's never going to really have to fully disclose what her medical condition is, but still he's going to have to justify or at least explain to some satisfactory degree why he reassigned her. It'll be interesting to see what happens when he comes up with that report.
I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any explanation he could come up with that would hold water because it doesn't seem like there's any medical condition she could have that is not outstripped by some medical condition that somebody else in the jail has.
Well, you're absolutely right. But also, I think you talked about this yesterday, his job is to make sure that the more criminal of criminals stay in jail and the, you know, the idiots stay out. And so she's pretty much an idiot, first-time offender, if you will, at least first time she was caught, really, or whatever else. I mean, she's a lightweight. So get her out, put her on house arrest, and then, you know, keep the other ones in. And the whole race card has been dropped ever since the Tracy Morgan thing came out. You know, here is the black actor. He's got two DUI convictions, and he's
He's on monitored bracelet house arrest.
And I do see that. I do see that we're all saved because Gloria Allred is on the case as of today.
Oh my God! Everybody's in it. Al Sharpton, Gloria Allred. I tell you, those two should get together and go bowling.
I want a reality show with Al Sharpton and Gloria Allred locked in a room together. Here's what you do. Here's what you do. You take Gloria Allred. You take Al Sharpton. You put him in a penthouse. You install a lot of cameras, and then you just demolish the building with them inside while we watch. There you go. The end. That'd get like a 90 share.
I want that.
You just put them both in the car, and then you kick the car to the bottom of the ocean. The end.
Called Big Brother.
That's exactly. All right. Well, she's going to stick out. I mean, we're going to be talking about variations of this because you're going to stick out the rest of the sentence, and we'll be talking a little bit to this. But
I still think she'll get out sometime around the 26th. I think she'll serve 23 days, and then I think they'll put her on or have her continue her probation.
Probably. I would like to think that she's scarred for life, though. That's I'm clinging to that hope, though.
She's not scarred.
Yeah, there's still.
You know what? She'll forget all about this in a couple of weeks and to make some other idiotic mistake.
Slide out of that brainless head of hers. Do you suppose, I mean, really, do you think she's just too dumb to have this scar her for life?
Yeah, I really do. I really think she thinks she's a martyr. I think she really thinks she's doing this so that the young girls who look up to her, and if parents, if your kids are, smack them now. I think she really thinks she's being some sort of heroine here. And once she's out of there, it'll be this big, you know, it's like she just came off the cross kind of thing. She's just big hero, big, you know, this big savior of all people who have done things wrong because right. She stuck out her sentence. And then a couple weeks later, because she thinks she's a big heroine, she'll forget all about it and get on heroin.
I was going to say big heroine in this case, having multiple meetings. All right. Enjoy your afternoon. I'm glad that it's warm down there. Say hello to the sun for us, and we will talk to you soon. James Roop, God Among Men.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. There you go. Jim Roop, kids. All right. We're like 4 hours behind and taking a break. So we're break now. That didn't take long. As soon as the was out of my mouth here, we're breaking. I'll break here. We'll come back. Your phone calls. People are guessing what movie I'm talking about. I'm really not trying to do a cheesy guess the sound thing, but, you know. I don't have any pride. I'm not proud. I'll do whatever. No, we'll get back and see if people are going to take a crack at this movie. People have also, they're already taking issue. They're piecing apart this top five list and telling us what we've left off. Tim Riley returns with the news. Like is at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You stay right there, my chums. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Rick Emerson Radio Program. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Why, hello.
Wonder how long I can keep doing that. I just realized this song, this beginning, it loops the same intro a few times before it does any sort of a breakdown here. Radio Program. There we go, then it changes. 503-733-2970. We got Tim Riley. We got the Hollyhocks. With Sean D and the Walkers. We got Tim Riley coming up with the Ministry of Truth here in a minute. Like is at 3, Donna Mike at 7. I feel bad. Let's plow through these calls. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, this is Tony.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. Is that from Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo?
You're talking about the movie, the song I was playing earlier?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's find out, shall we? Here's the question. Why are you familiar enough with Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo to even be able to make an educated guess about that?
It was just the way you described it. Like, I haven't seen it since I was a little kid.
Yeah. Yes, like, it is, in fact, from Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. My wife and I realized that I bought it at CD Game Exchange because it was like a dollar. And it was sitting at the... Somebody else had, like, turned it in. And I'm like, how much are you going to sell that for? Like, a dollar? I'm like, how can I not own Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo? It is such a cultural catchphrase. That title is a cultural icon. And I'm like, you know, I've never actually seen it. I'll buy it. And then I just completely... And, of course, I just completely forgot that I owned it. Because, really, like, why would you commit that to memory? And the other night, my wife and her sitting in eating dinner. We're like, I don't know. There's nothing on TV. Do you want to go out? Do you want to hang around? Do you want to watch something? We're like, well, what's in our DVD collection? And I said, and I'm listing off the movies. And I'm like, well, I've got Boogie Nights, Bowling for Columbine, Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. And my wife's like, what do you mean? Let's watch it now.
wow. And so we watched Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo, and it was so bad we had to watch it over about four nights in 20-minute segments. It is awful. And it's so bad, and yet Ice-T is in it. Ice-T, who was in Breakin', the original Breakin', makes an appearance in this where he's doing... And there's, let me just say this. I did grow up as somewhat of a hip-hop fan, but I think even the serious heads, as they say, would agree with this. There's a reason that you don't sit around and listen to a lot of classic hip-hop, because most old-school hip-hop is bad. I mean, that's just the fact. Classic rap is not like classic rock. A lot of classic rap is just terrible. We thought it was great at the time. It's so bad now. Breakin' 2 is an unbelievably terrible movie, but it's so hilarious. I'm going to try to convince Court and Fatboy at KUFO to make it their midnight movie one of these days. Because I'm willing to bet that most of the people who say Electric Boogaloo as a suffix to things have never seen the movie. I was one of them until last night when I finished it. It's terrible. So, congratulations on guessing it, sir.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well... And
later.
All right. Well, hold on. Are you still there?
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. I'm going to have Scotty get your information. We'll toss you some meaningless crap from the crap stack. There you go. That's it. Scotty, can you get Tony's information there? Yes, it is from Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. I'm going to overlook, by the way, when I was describing just the worst movie ever, the guy who guessed Desperately Seeking Susan. I'm going to pretend that you didn't say that, sir. Because then I would have to hate you.
Exactly like what
a feeling. No, it totally does. Remember, Sarah, if you can't beat the system, break it.
Okay.
All right, let's quickly get these, and then we'll go to the news. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I normally don't call you twice in one day, but you...
Wait, hold on. Have you called me twice in one day?
No, I didn't. Anyway, you were talking about... You were playing,
that's good.
Deep Purple's...
Because then I'd have to go give Scotty a beating, yes?
The Machine Head version of Smoke on the Water.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard the Made in Japan version of that?
A long time ago. I used to have to play that at this rock station I worked at where they would dig up, like, alternate versions of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I played it at KFMY back when it first came out. Sorry, I'm about 20 years older than you. But I love that. I love Hey Joe for this specific reason. It's from Shades of Deep Purple, their first album in 1968.
I really feel like this is a conversation you ought to be having with Craig Adams or...
No,
you
ought
to be calling
no.
Marty Party with this.
The Jammin' Salmon.
Okay.
Anyway, if you get a chance to listen to Hey Joe, it's Ravel's Bolero. It's been redone. It's very good.
Boy, this I really do feel like it's Sunday night on KGON. Cool, man.
Well, you know, I was listening to it.
You're listening to KMET. Ooh, yeah.
This is, you want to be relatable? I was sitting pondering whether I should just go ahead and go. Or burn my draft card and move to Amsterdam. You know, that was the choice I had to make in those days.
I'm Redbeard. You're listening to Flashback. All right, excellent. Thank you,
Mountaintop
sir.
Mountaintop Radio, KFMY, 97.2 on the radio.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right. Jesus. Coming up later, Rockline with Bob Coburn. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, sorry, I don't have any call letters memorized.
Yeah, seriously. Yes. Try to be really high and sound ponderous when you call in, too. What's up?
Yeah. Hey, as far as top five went, really, really cool top five, and I can really relate because I just got a new working LP.
I was just cranking up the Victrola, Rick.
Well, you know, and so I've been kind of going through all my old Who stuff and just really digging all that old stuff. Never feel ashamed of rocking out to any of those power ballads.
It's not that I feel ashamed of rocking out to, like, the songs. It's just because they have been so overused and used in a Bad to the Bone is a perfect example. Now, I'm not saying it's the worst song ever. Kind of a cheesy song, but, you know, it was a perfectly serviceable rock blues song. Until it was bastardized by use in 1,000 terrible movies, 1,000 awful commercials. And
don't forget cartoons mouthing the word.
And the, and the song was just completely diluted down, not unlike Born to be Wild by Steppenwolf. The last time I saw that, it was being used by a CGI mouse in Stuart Little. So, I mean, it's hard to take songs like that seriously. I'm not ashamed of anything I listen to, but it is hard to take certain songs seriously after a while.
Yeah. Well, hey, I just wanted to call up and let you know the Survivor.
Yes.
The lead singer from that is still on the radio doing the Budweiser, you know, Today We Salute You.
Is that him, the real man of genius?
That is the guy that's singing in the background.
Real man of genius!
Yeah, that is the guy.
That's the guy from Survivor?
Yep.
God bless him. Good for him.
Hey, you know what? Make a buck when you can make
a buck. Oh, no, seriously, dude. I don't have any problem with any musician selling out to do whatever it is they got to do to pay the rent. Like when Andrew WK's album first came out,
right.
He sold, I think, all but two of the Death Cab for Cuties the same way. When their records come out, like all 10 of the songs are already sold. And you know what? Record companies screw musicians so badly. I don't bust on any musician for making a dollar wherever they can. You're not going to make it from the record company. So
absolutely.
All right.
Grey's Anatomy is out there trying to support all those small bands.
Thank you.
Everybody's got to sell out.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Don't forget, we are coming to you live today from the CD Game Exchange Studio right here in the basement of the Columbia Broadcasting Complex. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Rudy Giuliani will be in Portland Friday. He'll be at the Fox Tower on Southwest Park Avenue at 10:45. The Rudy Giuliani Presidential Committee has announced that visit. Starbucks news. Starbucks has settled a suit with a bipolar barista. They agreed to pay $85,000 to settle a disability discrimination lawsuit right after the company fired a bipolar barista.
God, imagine how hot she must be. Seriously, baristas are hot and bipolar chicks are hot. Imagine how hot a crazy barista must be.
Why are we overmodulated all of a sudden?
I'm fine.
No, it's me.
Okay.
I guess I'm fine.
You sound fine in my headphones, too.
Okay.
Is it your mic or your headphones?
It was my headphones.
I'm fixed now.
So anyway, they paid $85,000.
Maybe maybe she's not the only one who's bipolar.
Oh, that could be. That would be bad.
with the whole bipolar.
I barely knew her.
No, I mean, crazy chicks are hot and Starbucks chicks are hot. She must be some supernova of hotness. Mm-hmm. Wait, is she 18?
It does not say.
Well, let's hope she is for the sake of my leching.
The company gave her 2 extra years of training and support. Still didn't work out.
I wonder what a bipolar barista. I wonder what the symptoms of that are. I mean, not
is
a
bipolar. What it says on her name tag?
Sir, hello? Hello, I'm welcome to Starbucks. What do you want? I want a double tall half cap, no skim, triple whip, you know, whatever. That'll be great. You son of a bitch! I'm sorry, bipolar jokes are just too easy to make. They're laying right there. They're the lowest fruit of comedy. All right. I'm sorry. I'll
be giving to you. It was a little gift from God.
Just like bipolar disease itself. They're just put there to amuse the rest of us. All right.
Well, there's a recall of a favorite children's toy. The makers of Thomas and Friends Wooden Railroad Toys is recalling 1.5 million of them.
Thomas and Friends Lil Bag of Glass.
Mm-hmm. They could be toxic if eaten by children. These are wooden trains, buildings, and other parts. They are, instead of soul... They spelled it S-O-L-E. It was sold from January 2005 through this month.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of parents think wooden toys are more educational for kids, but they choke easier on them.
Mm, all right.
Police in Australia are hunting for 2 assailants who attacked a man with a swordfish during a home invasion. The victim claims the man launched a serious assault on him with a sword, sword-like snout. He was left with cuts to his arms, back, and hands.
Oh, fantastic. I love this country.
It happened in Queensland.
Really, this country is just, is wonderful. I love this. Now I sound bipolar. First of all, I hated everything about an hour ago. Now I love this life and everything about it.
No, Australia's wonderful. This is an Australian story.
Well, I'm just saying I love
the Americans
world.
This time.
I love
we can't be leaders every time.
Can't be leaders in swordfish maimings.
No.
Oh, that is so great. Well, you know, we have one of those stories about every 18 months about some guy who thinks he's Hemingway, and he's out there strapped in like Quint on the Orca into that chair trying to get some sort of a swordfish, and it comes out of the water and spears his stupid ass. Goes right through his thorax. Those stories warm my heart. They make me feel good. All right. Excellent.
They make us all feel bad.
Yes, they do.
Now something to make us feel worse. It's time for the snuff watch.
Ah, boo.
Boo hiss.
Boo. Boo death. What's odd is that one of these days Jim Carroll's going to die, and then we'll use his own song to announce his death. I don't think he sees that coming. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Don Herbert, who was television Mr. Wizard, introducing generations of young viewers to the joys of science, is dead.
So sad.
He was 89. He had bone cancer and died at his suburban Bell Canyon, Los Angeles home.
I picture him in his kitchen, though, trying to cure his bone cancer with, like, a candle and, like, a thing of orange juice and some thumbtacks and a garden hose.
Well, he taught kids how to use their thinking skills as a scientist.
Deborah, today we're going to be looking at my metastasizing tumor. Now, pick up this magnifying glass. That is all funny if you watched his program. Did you ever watch his show, Sarah, Mr. Wizard?
I think I did when I was really young.
I was on Nickelodeon for a while.
Yeah.
It was a great... I had his books, too. Did Jimmy watch Mr. Wizard, probably?
I did, yes.
Did you have any of his books?
No.
I had his Supermarket Science series. Oh, God damn. Good. You know, I'm such a little nerd. Less so now, the little part anyway. No, but I was a nerd even as a kid. God damn, I love Mr. Wizard. It's not like I'm all broken up about it, but I mean, he was a great guy. And you know what? He made my childhood a little bit better because I had his books and I had his... I watched his TV show. And the genius of Mr. Wizard... was that he, you know, goddamn, if teachers were more like Mr. Wizard was, you know, I might have found school a little more interesting. And not that everybody could be that guy, but he really did make science interesting. And you think about this. I mean, I would get out of school. Nobody likes school. Like, kids hate school. But I would go home, and I would pick up my Mr. Wizard Supermarket Science book, which my parents had bought me. And I would spend hours on a weekend or during the summer going through and making and conducting and doing my own science projects, like, for no reason. Wasn't being graded. Wouldn't get anything out of it. Wasn't going to get me into college. I just did it because he made it fun. He honestly, sincerely made learning about science exciting and fun and cool. And you didn't even think anything about it. He didn't try to trick you into, you know, let's play an exciting math computer game or some retarded. He didn't give you some stupid lecture like, you know, that they always do about it. Well, we're going to teach you how to make learning. He didn't even tell you, today, kids, we're going to make learning fun. If you tell a kid you're about to teach him something or that you're going to make learning fun, kid, brain off. Doesn't listen anymore. You can't tell a kid you're about to make learning fun. You just give him some fun stuff to do. And here's the key. Don't tell them they're learning something. It's like taking your carnivore friends to Pirate's Tavern, Tim. You might be, you know, maybe the first time, you don't even tell them it's vegan.
No.
You just take them and go, have some fish sticks or whatever. Have some fettuccine. Have some, what is that great thing I had there? Have some jerk chicken. You don't even tell them it's not real meat until afterwards. You go, ah, ha, ha, fooled you. It was tofu. So it is with Mr. Wizard. He just let you do stuff, and then later you realized you were learning. He didn't try to sucker you into it. He was a great guy. And he was, I would say this, I don't know who the title of Godfather of Nerds is, you know, the Godfather of Geeks, but he's one of them.
Mm.
Probably Gene Roddenberry, too. Mm. I don't really know if there is, at least for the 20th century, if there is a Godfather of Nerds, but Mr. Wizard, he's right up there.
And he was a 1940s graduate of La Crosse State Teachers College in Minnesota. He served in the U.S. Army Air Corps during World War II. He worked as an actor, model, and radio writer before starting Watch Mr. Wizard in Chicago on NBC. The show moved to New York after several years. He was also a wizard behind closed doors. He was the father of six children.
He was a sperm wizard. I wonder if he did it like, and now, Gladys, you're going to lay down on this table and I'm going to impregnate you using one of my billions of sperm produced daily. Please not watch. And then that little sound play. Fantastic. God bless him. All right. 503-733-2970. Let me see if I got a couple Mr. Wizard things to read here quickly before we bring the curtain down on this. Rick, Mr. Wizard blew my seven-year-old mind when he filled up a glass with ice and then filled it with water. I was flabbergasted when the glass didn't overflow with water when the ice melted. Simple but impressive. Mr. Wizard and Mr. Rogers have a special place in heaven. Todd, you know, there's a number of things to this day that I know how to do or skills I have because of Mr. Wizard. Who was it? God, it wasn't my wife. It was somebody years ago. It was a friend of mine, somebody I knew who was growing marigolds.
Your mother?
It might have been my mom, even, but I think it was later than that. I don't know, but it was somebody, it might have been a teacher, who was growing marigolds, and marigolds are pretty, but a lot of times they have a disagreeable odor. And they were like, wow, these marigolds are pretty, but goddamn they smell, or whatever they said to me. And I was like 9, and you know what I mean? So I said, you know, if you take a teaspoon of sugar and pour it into the base where you keep the water, your marigolds won't smell anymore. And they put a teaspoon of sugar into the base where the marigolds got their water from. Damn, like a day later, marigolds quit smelling altogether. Do you know, let me ask you this. You go to the store, you buy yourself some celery. Your celery goes limp. How do you make it crisp again?
I don't know.
You cut off the base, you put it in water. You cut off the base of your celery, you put it in water, like 5-6 hours later, bam, it snaps like it was brand new. Doesn't matter how wilted it is.
That is interesting.
I also know how to make a magnifying glass just out of maple syrup. These are all things that I know because of Mr. Wizard.
MacGyver?
So, see, he was the MacGyver of a previous generation for the younger set. So anyway, nerds and geeks across the world, we bow our heads just a little bit and we remember Mr. Wizard. So God bless you, sir. Rest in peace. There you go. Snuff watch for Mr. Wizard. We got a break here. Back after this. Don't go anywhere. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Sense?
No, you're just kooky.
I am kooky. Wait, what do you mean by kooky?
I don't know, a little nutty.
What do you mean by nutty?
Just a little strange today, that's all.
I'm feeling a little peculiar. All right, we now enter the saddest part of the broadcast today, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. I can't find Fatboy. Doesn't he know I need him here for show material? Gordon Fatboy are not here. So, in lieu of Fatboy from KUFO, I now need a random listener to call up and explain to Sarah how unacceptable it is that she's never seen the movie Airplane. Please be calling now, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 to explain to Sarah how crucial it is as an American that she see the movie Airplane. In the meantime, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Rick, sir, Tim. Best show ever.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I don't know if you guys touched on the point. I firmly believe that the Willy Week, which I'm not the biggest fan of the Willy Week, but they did the raid on the Del Monte plant, and I think that's the whole reason the FBI came in.
Yeah, because they did they had a guy work there undercover for a couple weeks. Yeah,
that's exactly right. I think they were spawning off the tips of the independent media there.
Yeah, I think once they kind of shoved it in their face, they did a whole article about how. They're being paid less than legal citizens would be paid to do that job, certainly. And, I mean, once they kind of shove in the cops' face, the cops had to do something. They couldn't not address it. They had to do something.
It's America, damn it.
It's just retarded that Tom Potter would come out and, I am appalled. I am horrified at these police enforcing the law. Who do they think? And he's a cop, or was. Well, whatever. I'm done with it. All right.
Makes sense. And also, Paris Hilton, not that I care about her anyway. You touched on the most important part that Likas can't even touch, that it's the whole social statement of Hilton, not even the actual premise of her case, but the general statement that it speaks about society.
Yes.
So word up to you for saying that.
Thank you, sir.
And do you guys do jokes here?
No.
No.
Well, normally we would. I apologize, sir. We're under the gun. We're about to run out of time.
Best show ever.
Thank you, sir. Call us another time.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm going to talk as slowly as possible. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Pleased to be telling Sarah how important it is she sees Airplane.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Surely you can't be serious. See, you got to see Airplane.
I know all those lines.
Sarah,
I've just never seen it.
Sarah.
Yes, sir.
You've got to see Airplane. And also, I don't know. I sent an email earlier. I don't know if I regret it or not. I had to actually do my job. Take some candy for the flight attendants. I guarantee you it'll make your flight 10 times better.
If you just give them a little treat beforehand?
Yeah. Walk on the plane. There's usually somebody there greeting you when you step on. Take 4 or 5 Hershey bars. Yeah. Hey, just a little something for the crew. Free drinks for the rest of the flight.
Excellent.
All right.
Let us know if it works. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. I apologize. No time to be fair to another caller. If you called today and didn't get on, my apologies. Kind of under the gun, as they say. All right. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. For AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom, Tim Riley. Our PA is Scotty Jane. Of course, the gatekeepers, the one and only Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Ed McCarthy, Jim Roop, Lisa Goddard, and Steve Kastenbaum. Back again tomorrow, kids. As always, don't let the bastards grind it down and do try to help the retarded. And you have to try twice as hard because I didn't do jack today. Or yesterday. In their face. All right. Thanks for listening. Like us next. Dynamite at 7. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye now.